It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. Renee Ritchie's here from MacBreak Weekly. Alex Lindsay's back. We're so glad to have him. Doc Rock, too. And, of course, we're going to talk about Apple's announcement, three new Macs based on their M1 chip, why they're not faster than 98% of Intel laptops. We'll also take a look at the new Xbox Series X refrigerator. Eric Schmidt becomes a citizen of Cyprus, and they are canceling YouTube Rewind. That, plus the first video Carson ever saw on the internet. I got to warn you, it's disgusting. All coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit. This Week in Tech. Episode 797, recorded Sunday, November 15th, 2020. There's blubber all over the highway. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Get your new unlimited wireless plan for just $30 a month and get the plan shipped to your door free when you go to mintmobile.com/twit. And by Casper. From award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets, Casper transforms the way we sleep one snooze at a time. Go to casper.com/twit1 and use the code TWIT1 for $100 off select mattresses. And by privacy.com. Privacy lets you buy things online using virtual cards instead of having to use your real ones, protecting your identity and bank information on the internet. New customers get $5 to spend on their first purchase. Go to privacy.com/twit to sign up now. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially with everything you have to consider today. But there's one place where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And you're going to, I think, see if you look at the panel, there's a little bias in this particular episode. In fact, it looks a little bit like MacBreak Weekly. Renee Ritchie's here. He wasn't on MacBreak Weekly this week because you were getting briefed by Apple on the M1 chip. Glad to have you, Renee. Did you learn many things?
I have spent the entire week deep diving the M1. So I'm ready for anything you can throw my way,
this
Leo.
This is going to be a deep dive on M1, but there's other tech news, but we definitely are going to spend some time on that. That's why you're here. So is Doc Rock, the YouTube sensation. Aloha. And you're apparently a fan of not the Kansas City Royals.
No. This is a car club. We do highfalutin JDM style cars. That means Japan domestic model, by the way. And it's called a really executive luxury car. So my friends, they take like old Japanese luxury cars, like the Japanese version of Crown Victorias, and dress them up beautifully.
They have beautiful in Japan. I saw, we were in Tokyo, we saw a wedding. And they have a beautiful, kind of looks old, like, but maybe like one of those checker cabs, but it's big. And it actually, because the wedding headdress is so big, you open the door and then they have a door on the top to open up so that the bride can get out with her wedding headdress on. Yeah. It's a beautiful car. I would love that car. I mean, spacious, you know, I mean, just beautiful. I don't know.
Japan taxis are awesome. And I wish they sold them as regular cars because they're boxy and funny looking, but they have so much space and automatic doors. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They have automatic doors because you have to learn, if you're in Japan, not to close, slam the door like you would in New York City after you get out of the car, because you'll break the delicate automatic closing mechanism, which is very embarrassing. Hey, also with us, it's Alex Lindsay. Haven't seen you in a long, long time.
Hey, good to be here.
090 Media, founder of MacBreak and MacBreak Weekly. And he's been so busy with the various conferences he's been putting together. You still do, though, the morning show, right?
I do. My office hours, over we're doing them still 2 or 3 hours a day. And
crazy.
Over the course of every morning, I think we have about 400 to 600 people joining. So crazy. So it's still pretty crazy. But yeah, you people can find it just with the office hours. I tweet about it every once in a while, but we've been kind of just relaxing into the group that we have. We've got about 2,400 people that are part of the group, and then about 800 in Discord, and then I said about 400 to 600 show up every day to talk about media production and virtual production.
So nice. It's fun. Welcome. It's good to see you. So as you can see with the three Apple fans here, there might be a little bit of a bias towards the M1 chip. But I want to explain why we want to talk about it. I mean, this is from the point of view of technology, this is a very important week. This is the week Apple said, no more Intel. We're going to design our own chip, something we've been doing on the iPhone and iPad for years, but we're now going to put them on the Macintosh. This is not something Apple hasn't done before. In fact, this is the third time Apple's changed massive change of chip platforms. But this is one I think is going to be very interesting and may, in fact, be challenging to the rest of the PC industry, the x86-based industry. And that's why you guys are here, because you're going to help us all understand what is happening with the M1 processor. Apple announced three new Macintosh computers, all available day of, which was nice. People will start putting out their reviews. Renee, can you tell me when the reviews will come out, or is that also embargoed?
Yeah, typically when you have an embargo, the embargo's embargoed.
You can't even mention that you have an embargo. So I'm going to guess you don't. You just raise your eyebrows. No, you don't have to do anything. Don't even show him. I don't want to put him on the spot. But I would guess it'll be probably Wednesday. We'll start getting reviews of the new MacBook Air, the new MacBook Pro 13, and the surprise, the Mac Mini, all based on this Apple M1 chip. Can you tell us that you got briefed by Apple?
I mean, it's such a virtual weird world, Leo. I don't know. I did do a lot of research this week, though.
Okay.
I spent a ton of time
researching this week. There you go. That's what you can say. I've done a lot of research, some of which may or may not have been by talking to people at Apple. All right. That's fine.
Apple, because I always want to hear what Apple has to say, but I also want to hear what, the other side of all those different discussions.
Well, I'll give you the negatives, because there have been a number of articles, YouTube videos and so forth, saying, whatever you do, do not buy the new M1 Macintosh. And I'll give you some of the reasons, and then you guys can say why or why not that's accurate. First, of course, it's the first generation chip from Apple. We've never seen
it. Can I just say what it is before we talk about the negatives?
Yeah, what is
it? For some people. So the best way to think about it, if you're at all familiar with Apple Silicon, is the M1 is basically, if you took the A14, the chip that's in the new iPad Air and all the iPhone 12s, you made the X version of that, the one that you would expect to see in the next generation of iPads Pro. So instead of 6 CPUs, it has 8 CPUs. Instead of 4 GPUs, it has 7 or 8 GPUs. And then you added a little bit of Mac-specific stuff like hypervisor acceleration, emulation acceleration, Thunderbolt controllers. So a little bit of uniquely Mac stuff. But that's, I think, the gist, the quick gist of what
it's, an it M1 isn't is. A brand new chip. It's an evolution of the existing A14 chips.
It's a sibling. Right. And I think, it's a 14th generation IP.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important piece of information is that Apple isn't creating a new chip. This is just a bigger, faster version of what they're using in the iPad. So in the iPhone and everything else. So it's not, and that's one of the things, this is an evolution. They've been building their own chips in reality for quite some time. And so they just haven't moved it over to the Mac OS until now. So, and that gives them a lot of history and a lot of stability that we wouldn't expect. I think we think of this as a first generation chip, but it's really a 14th, 15th.
You've already debunked point one of the multi-point.
As funny as I've been telling people for at least since they got announced, then was like, well, this is not going to work and this is not going to work. And do you remember the Intel transition? And I was saying, this is not the Intel transition. You really have to let go of what it used to be. And I get that. I understand your basis for that thought. But the first statement they made is, we've been doing this for a decade. literally walked out on stage, and within the first 6 words, he said, hey, we've been doing it. He said, aloha, in my head. We've been doing this for over a decade. And today, we're going to show you, what's popping. I've been trying to say that to everyone. Just calm down and relax. This is not the first gen. If you have an iPad in your, especially my DJ friends, if Serato and, Algorithm DJ runs on your iPad, it will run on the new computer.
Okay, but I guess I know what role I'm going to be playing on the show today. Okay, but there's no denying Apple's been designing chips since 2007. But they've never done a desktop version of this chip. This chip will be attempting to run software designed for an Intel Mac, not for an A14 processor. And it's a different environment. There are new things. You mentioned this USB 4 Thunderbolt. You mentioned the unified memory architecture. The memory is actually on the chip, which then that brings up the second caveat or negative, because this chip can only have two Thunderbolt channels and can only have up to 16 gigs of RAM. That's the max you can get on these new Macintosh computers. So they are somewhat limited. I mean, you could get 64 gigs of RAM on the Intel Mac Mini.
I think that's a misconception. Like, this is a really weird thing. Like, I think nerds forgot, because we only ever buy the high end, that the literal machines that these are replacing, the MacBook Air, the lowest end Pro, and the original Silver that they don't sell anymore, the Silver Mac Mini, were all 16 gigabytes.
Yeah. And if you want more RAM, you could get more RAM. Not on an Air.
Not on those machines. Level,
not on an Air, but you could on a MacBook Pro, and you could on a Mac Mini.
But they were different versions of those computers.
Right.
And also, like, the person who buys the Air is not typically the person who would want 64 gigs of RAM.
Well, but Mac Mini buyers, which you own a lot of Mac Minis, are they all 16 gigs?
Most of mine are, actually, because we don't really expect them to do that kind of work.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so when we buy a Mac Mini, I'm expecting it to do a limited amount of work. And in fact, I'm going to be buying a Mac Mini, one of these new ones, in the next couple of weeks, is specifically for the kind of stuff that we do. It could be perfect, you know, for what we, you know, again, we don't expect Mac Minis are kind of, for us, like glue that we tie things into. We don't have high expectations. In fact, looking at the stats that I've seen come out so far, I have a feeling that we can do more with them than we did in the past. So they're pretty, it looks pretty positive as far as what that looks like. And we're limited right now to 16 gigabytes, we have to remember that this is the 320 by 240 version.
You know, I understand. Yeah. You know, no, like, but I'm not saying one should never buy an M1 Mac Apple Silicon Mac, but that these are not, there's going to be a lot more to come, and it might be prudent to wait because it's first gen, because there are limits.
Well, don't buy it if you wouldn't buy the Intel version. Like, if you would never have bought the Intel version with 16 gigabytes and 2 terabytes, don't just buy these because they're shiny and new.
Well, here's
like,
a question.
Wait and buy the system you would buy.
I mean, some people were upset that, what, you mean a MacBook Pro with only two ports? I mean, that's not an illegitimate complaint.
Well, but that's the MacBook it replaced had two ports.
Right.
It's literally that.
Yeah. Right. But there is a question. Is 16 gigs, and now I'm going to put a different hat on, maybe a defense hat, but 16 gigs of RAM on this platform may not be comparable to 16 gigs of RAM on an Intel platform.
That's what I keep saying.
Intel's memory management is very different. Yeah. Right. It's segmented.
There's longer
it's
travel.
The same, like, it's LPDDR4 memory, and Apple has their own kind. It's LPDDR4X, which
this
is just
is
a slightly
probably
more efficient.
Faster than DDR4 because it's unified architecture, right?
Well, it's shared. Yeah, it's shared between the CPU and the GPU. But the thing is that LPDDR4 itself, even on the Intel machines, is limited to 16 gigabytes. When Apple goes above it, they drop the low power version. They use just plain DDR4, and they bolster the battery to compensate for it. So they're only replacing the lowest end, most popular and most constrained devices at this point.
Yeah, I think people cannot get that disconnect from their head. But again, you're doing memory calculations based on the way that a Intel-based processor handles memory, right? And I keep trying to akin it to horsepower, right? When you look at a muscle car, the horsepower is, you know, 500 horsepower. But if you go and get yourself a little rice rocket, like my boys up here, and you lighten it up and you put in some turbos and stuff like that, you end up with an 8.5 second Civic. I mean, it exists. Look at ESPN on sports, you know, races. You'll see it exists in the world. So again, everybody was trying to put that power to weight ratio based off of trying to move a lead sled level car. But if you take it down to a motorcycle or a Hayabusa or a Gixxer, you have things that are 105 horsepower. You know, a Suzuki Gixxer is 105 horsepower, but 0 to 60, it's faster than a Ferrari. So you cannot just align that speed that you know with the speed that what's going to come until you actually have it in your hands. And there's a lot of postulating bases on guessing.
It's premature.
Feel victimized.
Yeah. And even though weird benchmarks are leaking out to Geekbench and GraphicsBench, those are those we shouldn't judge until, as I said, something like Wednesday when the actual reviewers, people not Renee, but people like Renee, who are benchmarking furiously even as we speak, we'll have some better numbers. But
I do benchmark. I just prefer time to completed work. Like, I think benchmarks are like, was one person faster off the post? Was another person better at the at the end? So I like how long I ingest this footage, how long before I'm exporting.
I was just giving you plausible deniability, dude. Well, I don't know what you're doing with that machine you may or may not have. I was just protecting your ass there.
No, I appreciate it. I just mean, like, there's a lot. Like, benchmarks are one thing, but also I want to see how a bunch of people
– workloads. Yeah, But I mean, if you're a Photoshop user, 16 gigs, it's on Apple Silicon, but it may not be enough.
Imagine this though, Tulio. Like, imagine Photoshop that doesn't bounce 16 times before it opens. It doesn't beach ball constantly with every time you move the pointer. Like, the battery life is going to be transformative. Like, the performance is one thing. I think Apple was aiming for battery life, and they didn't get lucky with the performance.
Oh, that's
but
interesting.
I think the performance blew their expectations.
They prioritize battery life, you think, on these
machines? Yes.
On these machines. Not a Mac Pro or anything, but these machines, they were looking for battery life. Yet they put it in a MacBook Pro.
Well,
but this is the hipster Pro. I would say that this is the self-identified Pro.
What I was going to say is that with the two ports on the side and that 13-inch, we kind of considered the Pro Lite. You know, like, it was never really a Pro. You know, it was kind of like, it was like an Air Pro or a Pro Lite, but it was not really a true MacBook Pro ever. You know, and so when you look at the performance specs on it, it was not something we have a couple 13-inches that we bought, but it's the one above that. So it's not that one. And so we would consider that one a slightly... The advantage that it has over the Air is the fan, right? You know, like, that's the big thing, that it's going to be able to, manage heat more effectively than the Air.
So basically, this is a MacBook Air with a fan, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, that's how I view it.
Fan heat pipes.
We don't know what the clock speeds even. Apple didn't say clock speeds.
No, but
clock speeds
might
not matter anymore.
They may not matter?
I mean, I think that,
no, clock speeds may not matter anymore.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead, Alex.
Go ahead. All I was going to say is that the transformative piece of this is all of these things being on one chip. The fact that we don't have to go back out to the board all the time, don't have to use those external buses, we don't have to deal with all those external pieces, is going to dramatically change the performance profile. And so it's not going to matter exactly whether any one of these components is faster. The fact that they're able to talk to each other so much faster is going to make a huge difference in what's available. And I think that it's probably one of the most transformative things that we've seen. And I think that within a very short period of time, PC manufacturers are going to have to figure out some way to do something similar. You know, I think that, and it's going to be very hard, because without owning, what Apple is doing is they're forcing everyone to play a game that almost nobody else can play. Maybe nobody else can play. Is that I own we own the operating system, we own the hardware, we own all the components that go into it, and we're going to vertically stack those so that they all work together effectively. I don't know who else does that. And without being able to do that, I don't know how you keep up. Well, I look down the path of, okay, well, this is the 320 by 240 version. What happens when another one comes out that's got 32 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of RAM sitting on that chip with 24 lanes and, you know, all kinds of other stuff that are going into it when you think about a Mac Pro that is built for this? The performance specs could be dramatic, you know, and it really could put, you know, the PC industry on. Now, the PC industry will respond. They'll figure out some way to do it. But it's going to be I don't see how a traditional PC keeps up with what Apple has just done.
They'll sell modularity as a feature, I think, will be the big competitive edge they'll have.
Yes.
The PCs?
Yeah. Like, if you want to build a gaming rig and you want to have a Ryzen card or you want to have CUDA cores or whatever, I think they'll just...
Sure, but the question is if those have a hard time competing with this unified piece, what benefit does the modularity give you if you can't keep up with the unified architecture?
Well, some people just like
that we don't know
customizability. And one of the things that's becoming very clear, and this we'll talk about later the issue that with the Big Sur release and the slowdown of the certificate service. But one of the things that's becoming clearer and clearer is that this is a Apple is getting more and more locked down.
It's an appliance.
You can't, upgrade the memory. The memory is on the chip. You know, you can't upgrade the memory. There's nowhere to put it. The controller for the hard drive, such as it is on the chip so that you can't replace the hard drive because there's nowhere to put it. So increasingly, these are sealed boxes, black boxes.
And some people will hate that.
And some people won't want that.
Yeah.
If all you care about is how it feels to use it and getting a job done,
I think Apple commonly, I always think of Apple as they look at what 90% of the people want 90% of the time. And in that sense, 90% of the people, 90% of the time are going to want something that's faster, that works well, that's integrated. And there's a more of a fringe element that's going to want to, and I have a box sitting next to me that I built. So there are reasons that you build boxes that you need to do a very specific task. So I don't think that that's going away, but I think that there's going to be a large number of people that a vast majority that won't care, if the performance specs start to hit the rumors are. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of people that are just
I agree. Buy it. There's an upside clearly to the M1, but this or the M chips, the M family. But you can't. There are people who say 720p camera. What? Two ports? What?
Yeah. The 720p camera is easily addressable for the computers that it's replacing. That's a non-factor.
Because they have 720p cameras?
And also...
all the laptops.
I know, nowadays, and they suck.
Absolutely. But nowadays, the people who need a better camera per se, you're not going to use a built-in camera anyway. You're going to plug in a Sony A6400, like here, and you're going to slap on a Sigma 16 lens, like here, and you're going to be fine. So I don't care what they put in the machine, I'm not going to use it. The people that really matter... they don't care. But it's funny, as I'm watching YouTube videos and watching Nebula, all I saw was people who actually use mirrorless cameras complaining about the camera that they put in the computer. And it's like, there's some people that are just capitulating because they have to, or they make themselves feel better. Or like I tagged on Renee's post today, I said, I think people are literally saying all this stuff because they don't want to get tagged as a fanboy. So they have to say something bad, but it really doesn't matter for the people that are going to use it.
And maybe these cameras will be better because of the dedicated hardware
for ISP
image processing. Yeah.
Yes. Maybe. I mean, I don't know if it's 12
ISP.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, we send a lot of kits out and we just assume that the built-in webcam, whether it's PC or Mac, is not going to be usable for our events. It's not something that we even think about. So we send them either Logitech 920s or Brios. But that's just kind of what we send out. And that's a significantly better camera that you're never going to be able to afford to put into your device. And so back to Doc's, point, which is perfect, which is that for the people who care, you'll buy an extra camera. For the people who don't care, it's good enough.
So let's lower expectations then. People should not buy this unless they're replacing the Intel equivalent.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
This is not a high-end system. This is just a foretaste of what a high-end system might look like. Go ahead, Renee. I'm sorry.
I said nerds are going to buy the Mac Mini or the Air to tie them over until they get the more powerful machine just because they want the new thing. That's the way it'll be. Right. But I think a lot of people I don't want to say it was a safe and gutsy move because starting at the low end is a power profile we all know from Apple. Like this is the straight iPad Pro sort of play. So we know the power that's going into this. But also the MacBook Air is their most popular computer. Laptops far outsell desktops for Apple, and the MacBook Air far outsells any of the other laptops. So it's also gutsy. It's like they trust this enough to burn the boat behind them and go all in on M1 because they stopped selling. They're still selling the higher end versions of the Mac Mini and the 13-inch MacBook Pro on Intel. They are only selling this on the MacBook Air.
And I mean, knowing what people buy an Air for, this is going to be better battery life. It's no heavier.
Series was horrible.
The Y series, like the Intel chips were terrible.
Yeah.
So it'll be a better experience than your existing Air, and by a long shot, probably, right?
And the thing that killed me, there are two things that really impressed me. One is Apple seems genuinely surprised at how good these are, and that doesn't happen that often. Like sometimes, they'll project confidence, but I think they really were targeting battery life, and they got huge performance gains. But also, I have to admit, I had a chance to talk to some of them on the record on one of my shows, the Mac and macOS marketing team. And from what they were saying, Steve Tona, who runs he's director of product marketing for cross platform, said they were getting better results on Metal in emulation than they would get straight on Intel. So if you have an Intel app that leans on Metal, it will run better on Apple Silicon than it runs natively on Intel. And that is sort of makes me recategorize a lot of what my thinking was going in.
Well, and that's another unknown, because most of the software you run will be having to run on emulation on Rosetta 2. And so that's the other unknown, is how the software you need is going to work. I mean, if you're just using Apple software, I presume Logic, Final Cut, all the Office tools, they'll all be native.
If you're using After Effects, you're going to have to wait a while.
Is it universal binaries for all of those?
Yes.
So it's like it was in the Intel transition. One version of the program will run natively on either Intel or Apple Silicon.
Yes. Rosetta is a little bit different, though, because it'll do a translation on download, so you don't have to do it at runtime every time.
Yeah.
So it'll do it either when it's downloading or when it first runs. And for dynamic code, it'll still do it at runtime. But for everything else, and they've had 3 years to figure out how to accelerate the stuffing out of that, so to speak.
Yeah.
Somebody brought it up this week on actually one of your shows, Leo's, and they were talking about, the Microsoft Office is not going to work and this and that. I'm like, Microsoft Office works really well on phones and tablets. Microsoft Office works on Amazon super slow tablets. And a large portion of this stuff is gone cloud anyway. And so, again, one of the conversations came up, well, how is this stuff going to work with cloud-oriented apps? It'll be fine, because it's running in a browser, so to speak. So that's another reason why people's expectations of what you need for RAM and all this stuff were kind of different too. Many applications are trying to move to, they're taking the dependency off the CPU and they're moving the dependency to clusters that exist in space. And you're just sort of the window sort of back and forth. As more and more computer applications run that way, it'll be fine. Because, you know, when we got to, how do I remove this background of this, you know, picture on my iPhone? Your iPhone isn't doing a lot of that complicated calculation in the past that would run up to a server, get done, come back. But now you can do kind of half and half, you know, and then eventually it will be back to just the iPhone chip. So, again, I think people's thinking is based off of what we know, not where we're going. Apple's pulling a Gretzky.
And really, the Apple is what they need that computer to do is much bigger than what we've looked at in the past of a simple word piece. I mean, when we look at USDZ, when we look at AR coming, when we look at all of those things driving forward, Apple needs these computers to be higher performance.
Apple did say
some more leaked benchmarks that came out, Leo. They got so if people aren't aware of this, Geekbench automatically uploads everything you run, and I think a lot of people who have early access don't realize that. So the benchmarks just got all sucked up, and they've got a bunch of emulation benchmarks now, and the M1 by itself is faster than any Apple computer currently at single thread. Even in emulation mode, it is faster than any current Apple single core computer.
It's, according to Apple, faster than 98% of PC laptops, although PC World Gordon Maung called that BS. Apple is full of it, he said. This is
I think that he's trying to redefine. They're both defining two different things. Apple's talking about the total number sold, and he's talking about the number of different devices. So right. To him, it's not 98% because it's, well, there's only X number of devices, and Apple is one of those. Whereas Apple's talking about the total number of that are actually sold.
And, well, there's a lot of crappy PCs out there.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's how you get 98%.
Impressive statistic.
Right. He's not comparing apples to oranges. They said, whether we decide that's a useful statistic, and almost all those statistics are useless. But
yes,
what they were defining is of the total sold. They're not full of it. They're just picking a different. They're picking a more.
I wish they wouldn't do that. That's kind of a BS-y thing, because you know what people think that means. That if I were just to go to the store, the chance of me finding a laptop that's as fast as the new MacBook Air is 1 in 50. That's what they think it means. It's not what it means.
Well, but it will be interesting to see when it comes up what the cost of the computers that are faster than that will be on the PC
side.
And I'm going to guess.
They're comparing. If you read the fine print, what they really mean is faster than 98% of the i5-based PC systems with Intel 630 graphics. Based on the best-selling systems publicly on publicly available sales data over the last 9 months. There's a lot of fine print here.
I will say that if you give someone $1,000 and tell them to go buy a PC laptop, what I'm interested to see is, can you get a PC laptop with the same battery power, the same
battery life and power? Definitely not battery
life. But I think that in those, if you require those two things, you're probably going to have a hard time finding a PC at the same price that can do the same thing.
So what you guys have just spent the last half hour doing really is lowering expectations for this first generation.
Well, just saying
making logical expectations.
lowering them so that you don't say, well, this is going to, you're going to, is it going to blow my socks off? No.
I think your socks will be partially off your feet.
That's what I was going to say. Your socks will be slightly blown off.
Should anybody buy an Intel Mac anymore?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
They're still selling them.
If you have a piece of dedicated hardware that is very crucial to your business, right? Say like my laser or my CNC, that I would stick to Intel for a while, because those type of hardwares, they don't do these kind of, you know, firmware updates where I can get it fixed or whatever. Like, you know, there'll be $260,000 bricks that do nothing. So in that case, yes. And people love to tax people like me and my specialized machine is, well, it's going to break this. Yeah, but like, you know, my sisters, none of them would be bothered by the chains. They don't even know what kind of chip is in their computer right now.
They don't care.
But, you know, and then the other one that's going to be kind of crazy is people like to throw around this pro word. If there was three letters I wish that I could absolutely remove from everything to do with tech, it would be the word pro, right? Because people, when Apple does it, it's a fire. When Go Pro does it, well, it's a dope little camera that does what little cameras do. And you know what I mean? But Alex will tell you there's tons and tons and tons and tons of high level productions that are still using GoPros for certain shots.
Right.
It's not as many as the people who own GoPros want you to think, but they do exist. Right. If it solves the problem, if the screwdriver goes into the thing and you turn it and the screw comes out, it works. Does it?
Well, there's also like us level pro, and then there's like, you know, the MKBHD and Jonathan Morrison and Alex Lindsay level pro. Then there's like ILM and Pixar. I mean, I think you could spend infinite money, and it's almost like anyone who lives a mile north from you is a northerner. Anyone who does your workload or more is a pro, and anyone who doesn't is just not a pro at all.
100%. The pro is getting paid. If you're getting paid, you're pro. if it works, in the start.
What I will say is that. After seeing the rumored performance of this chip, we will hold on to the Macs that we have as long as we can.
As
soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to buy another Intel machine until I see what happens with the next Mac Pros and the iMac Pro, and especially the Mac Pro, which we won't see for a couple of years. But it will definitely keep me from wanting to upgrade unless I absolutely have to. When you have to, you buy what you need. If it's going to pencil out financially for a project, you buy the hardware as a pro, right? You don't think about what you need. You just go, okay, well, I'm going to bill out this much work on it. I'm going to go ahead and buy it. It doesn't matter. But I will say that we will only buy what we absolutely have to based on that performance. I think that the Mac, given this chip, I think that the Mac Pro the Mac Pros and the iMac will be the next group. And then I think the iMac Pro and the Mac Pro will be the next group, and I think that in those swaths, I think we're going to see significant performance increases. And so as someone buying them, I'm going to hold off, if I can, and not just jump into something because it was a cycle or because it's the end of the year or other things like that.
So that's an interesting point, that what you got from this was a signal that it's worth waiting.
That's what I'm doing for the 16 inch, like for sure.
That's really interesting.
I'm waiting on that 16 inch.
I think that the performance that we're going to see is going to be stunning. right. You know, as we go forward. And I think that, again, I think that by the time we get to the Mac Pro 2 or 3 years from now, I don't think we're going to see anything else out there that has that kind of performance.
So I think it's not just the performance. I think it's like the battery life is going to be amazing for the performance, but it's those little things like when I'm scrubbing through a Final Cut timeline and I have to wait for the beach ball, or I'm launching Photoshop and I have to wait for the filter, shaving seconds off of that is going to eventually save minutes and hours of my life. And that's the part I'm really looking forward to.
Well, also, Alan Kay said, if you really want to make good software, you got to make the hardware. Or maybe say, if you really want to make good hardware, you got to make the software. But that's the point, is you need to control the full stack. And that's one thing that Apple's doing that really nobody except maybe Samsung with their Exynos chip is doing.
It's been a rough few years for Exynos.
Yeah, I mean, but they make the operating system. And we'll talk about Big Sur in a little bit, but they're making the chips, they're making everything. And that's more than just raw power. That's a synergy that is very hard for a PC maker to duplicate.
It's purpose-built. Like, they have, when you hear Johnny Cerruti talk about it, he says that basically their job is to make the fastest chipset in the world, given the thermal limits of that, of the chassis, and that every year their job is to increase that performance, only constrained by the limits of time and physics. And when you have a company that's not profit and loss based on the chipset, which Qualcomm and Intel just have to be, but they only care about selling iPhones and Macs, there is no P&L for that chipset. They can run as fast as they want. That puts incredible competitive pressure on the industry. And I think when you combine them with what AMD has been doing, because AMD has been super impressive with Ryzen and now with Navi 2, I think it's industry redefining this year. I think we're going to look back and think that, as bad as 2020 has been in some ways, in terms of just silicon for the PC industry in general, it's going to be transformative.
Well, that's why I was willing to make this show more about Apple than it would normally be, because I do think this reverberates throughout the entire PC industry.
I mean, 100%, just from a security standpoint, 100%. All of the, let's say, nefarious software out there is designed to bust Intel stack, right? So we're going to get a whole bunch of computers out there that are not running Intel stack. So we're starting malware zero. Like, there's none. Right.
Well, you know what I'm saying? And also, I just think that there is no way, when you look at the trajectory of this tiny little chipset doing what it's doing, is, at least in the rumors, and we'll see more of the reviews as they come out. But as we look at that, and you mark a potential trajectory beyond battery life, just performance, the PC industry has to do something like it, or it's going to be very hard.
And who would do that? NVIDIA with they're buying ARM.
I think that NVIDIA is buying ARM, but I don't know. I mean, to me, I think that you almost look at something crazy like Microsoft buying AMD, you know, and merging that together and almost having to go straight at Apple. You know, like, basically you almost to own both of those.
You see the problem they have, because if they do that, they then completely cut off their OEMs.
Yeah.
And that is a complete
really
change of their business. Because without Dell and HP and Lenovo making PCs, it's a very different business. So if all of a sudden Microsoft says, and Windows now is designed to run on our custom ARM chips, that's a problem. You can't do that. In fact, I can't think of another company that's in the position Apple is, with the exception of maybe.
They'd have to build a consortium. They'd have to literally sit down and everybody put their big boy pants on and put their egos away and build a consortium. You need a consortium.
That may be the kind of response you need.
Microsoft.
I also think, like,
Dell.
No, that's a very good point, Rock.
I also think you were right before, Leo. Like, there is going to be people for whom this approach is anathema. You know, they just don't want an appliance computer. Apple's not building general purpose computers anymore. They're building things like appliances. Like, very few people care about being a mechanic to their own car. They don't care about upgrading their refrigerator. You know, they don't care about changing their television set instead of buying a new television set. And Apple is laser honed on that consumer market with a little bit of service made to pros, you know, at the very top of the end. But there are going to be a lot of people who just want to buy a case and upgrade the card every year. They just want to buy a case and upgrade the RAM every year. They want to do it like a hobbyist. And Apple is not going to serve that market at all, or they have very specific needs like high-end gaming that just Apple is probably not going to cater to. And it's the same way where someone says, you know, Apple is Sherlocking this app. And I'm like, yeah, except for cross-platform people who Apple will absolutely not serve at all in any market. And there's tremendous value in that. I think there'll still be tremendous value in doing everything that Apple's not doing.
Is there a risk to bifurcating developers? So you're going to really, I mean, this is so already the case, but it's going to be even more so. You're going to have one category of developers that do iOS, macOS, and then you're going to have the rest of the world. Yeah, and there, like there's the not going to be much more crossover, right?
Like the height of Windows.
Again, I think that the issue is, and I think that I don't know what was going to happen there, but I kind of feel like the John Hodgman ad at the end, the little John Hodgman thing, that little preview could be a preview to a searing. Like Apple is about to have, you know, they're about to have the high ground when it comes to performance. And we could, you know, I think we may expect to see more of those kinds of ads again, you know, where they're not just positioning ads that make you feel good. They are going square and hitting, you know, the other platform really, really, really hard, you know, because they have it. They're going to have for the next couple of years to get to Doc's point, you need to build a consortium, but that consortium takes time. It'll take 2 years to organize it. Then it'll take two more years to agree on things. Then it'll take five more years to build it. You're talking about 10 years of everyone trying to organize themselves around the idea of what to do while Apple doesn't have to talk to anybody, you know, and that is devastating, you know, and I think that so what you look at with developers is, well, I have, you know, for the average business user, 15 hours or 18 hours of usage time means a lot, you know, for the, and then as the performance comes out for the average 3D artist or the average video artist, seeing these crazy performance improvements is going to mean something else. And so, you know, and then you take that with a searing set of ads that constantly underline that. And it doesn't mean that Apple's going to take more than 10 or 15% of the market, but that's the most valuable 10 or 15% of the market in the industry. And that really takes a lot of the fun out of it for a lot of other PC manufacturers.
I should probably play the John Hodgman piece.
That was such a good moment.
One more thing on the one more thing, wasn't it? And it was.
But I just felt like that might be, at first I thought it was just funny that they would add it in, and I was like, oh, that's really a blast from the past. And I was like, oh, I wonder if it's a hint to the future of how hard they're planning to
Well,
swing.
That's another thing I think people don't let set in. These are the slowest SoC chips that will ever exist. Ever.
Right?
So everyone's, by the way, these are the slowest SoC chips that will ever exist. So 6 months from now, when the M2 or the X, as Renee says, is going to come out, you know, when we get ready to build 16s, now we're at the next one. And then soon we'll be at the M5 and we'll be at M6, which chips are invisible.
Get it, that's the MI6.
I do think that the more modular PC could catch up at some point, but the problem is it's going to take them a long time to make the turn because it requires so many people to agree on something, and that is the thing that Apple is forcing. And I think that what we're seeing over and over again is Apple starting to really force the industry to do things they're uncomfortable with.
John Hodgman.
Stop. Hang on. Wait. One more thing. Hi. I'm a VC. Is there time for questions? Good, because I have one. Why make all these advancements? What's the point? Right? Oh, you're so quiet now. Look, I'm a machine. I'm proud of it. That's my fan. Longer battery life. Plug it in. Where are you going? Just plug it in. Fast. I'm fast. I'm still fast. Check it out. Still got it. PC. Still got it. I've always been there. I always will be. Fast. Okay. My battery's drained. I got to go plug in. Good luck.
Thank you, Apple. Courtesy Apple Computer.
Such a good moment.
Don't take us down, please. People were wondering why John Hodgman's beard disappeared last week. Now we know. he had a gig. That really was great to see him back. Let's take a little break. This will not be all Apple all the time, but there are a few more things we need to talk about. And I really, honestly, I want to defend this. I think this is a big shift for PCs, for the desk, for computing. And maybe the shift is, maybe Renee, you kind of nailed it when you said there's a fork in the road. Appliances, whatever that other thing is. Workstations, I don't know. and here's the fork in the road.
Well, but we also have to remember there that, the Mac Pro is not an appliance, and it was built in the era of them working on this chip.
Right.
So it may not be the only outcome.
That's a year off probably, right? They said this is going to take a two-year transition. It'll be at the end of the two-year transition, it'll be a new Mac Pro.
It was last time.
Well, they only took a year the last time.
Yeah, but it took them a while to get that final.
But it ended with Xserve and Mac Pro. Those were the last ones they rolled out.
Right.
True that.
It may be faster than 2 years. You know, Apple likes to under-promise, over-deliver. But
after 2020, Leo, nobody knows anything.
No, but I don't know what's going to happen next. I'm very happily bought the MacBook Pro. Maybe I should have bought the Air. You think that was a crazy thing to do? I wanted a fan.
When they announced it back in 2016, they announced this weird computer, and they said it was for people who would normally buy a MacBook Air but just wanted a little bit more. Yeah. And I think we have gotten people who self-identify as pro. They're like, they founded startups, they're doing crowdsourcing things, or they want to feel like they're a pro. They want that pro logo on that machine, but they don't have intense compute needs.
Poser is what you're saying. I'm a poser.
No, so it's literally a MacBook Air with, you know, slightly better performance and slightly better battery life. And I think Apple they sold a ton of those. And I think they're smart enough to know to keep that around.
20-hour battery life, maybe.
Yeah, for Apple-optimized video.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everything else is going to be good too.
Yeah. All right, let's take a little break. Renee Ritchie, it's nice to see you. We didn't have you on Mac Break Weekly this week, but we're going to use you up. We're going to miss you, not miss you. Next Tuesday, you'll be back. We're going to use you up in the next couple of days and find out everything you know. Maybe your review will be out by then. We can get you to talk off on the record. Doc Rock is also here. It's always a pleasure to have you. YouTube.com/DocRock.
Yes, and I got to keep the bearded and bespectacled seat warm for you, Renee.
Thank
so we're
yes,
good.
Yes, he did a really good job.
I even said
job.
A boat and sorry.
Yeah, you were great. Thank you.
Filling in.
And you kept Andy appropriately. Like you let him go, but you gave him enough rope, but you didn't let it. You know.
And of course, Alex Lindsay, we haven't seen in an age. It's great to see you in an uncharacteristically gray box. Usually you have some fancy backdrop. It's okay.
You know, the grays become easier to manage.
Yeah. Everybody loves, 30% gray? Everybody loves that. Everybody loves that.
They're nice. It's just easy. You can take it with you on trips.
It's a hanky. Our show today brought to you by what's in here, Mint Mobile. Breaking up with your wireless provider just got a whole lot easier. We love Mint Mobile around here. They were the first company to sell premium wireless service online only and pass the savings on to you. And now Mint Mobile is introducing something we've all been waiting for, their unlimited plan. And get this, unlimited nationwide text, unlimited nationwide calling, unlimited data, $30 a month. $30 a month. Let that sink in. An unlimited plan for $30 a month. Now I'm on the $25 a month, 12 gigabytes a month, which for me is, you know, that's plenty of data. And so they still have those other plans. But if you want unlimited, that's about a third what I'm paying the big boys for. A third. How much are you paying, overpaying to your soon-to-be ex-wireless provider? Mint Mobile saves by not having retail. They're online only. They pass those savings on to you. All the plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. I know you want to know, so I'll tell you. It's T-Mobile. So if you get great T-Mobile service where you are, you're going to get it with Mint Mobile for about a third the cost. You can bring your own phone, keep the same phone number along with your existing contacts. They'll just send you the SIM, no charge for the SIM, unlike the other guys. And, of course, if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. They also sell phones. In fact, that's where I got this iPhone SE, $15 a month. So for half what I'm paying the big boys, I get the phone and the service. For half. Phone and service. Break up with big wireless. Switch to Mint Mobile's premium unlimited data plan, just $30 a month. I don't need to say really much more. That's the deal. Get your new unlimited wireless plan for just $30 a month and get the plan shipped to your door free. Go to mintmobile.com/twit. mintmobile.com/twit. $30 a month for unlimited everything. mintmobile.com/twit. Thank you, Mint Mobile, for your support of This Week in Tech. Anand did a pretty good breakdown, I thought, on the N1 chip, given that we don't know much about it, but they were able to take this illustration from the Apple keynote. There's the chip. By the way, that's the RAM on the same.
Can I just say that when a company drops their own die shot, especially Apple, because usually you have to wait for Chipworks to do it. When they drop their own die shot, that's like the version of a John Travolta strut.
They're pretty proud. And then Anand was, they really worked hard to annotate this. Here are the, well, this is an interesting thing. They have an 8-core and a 7-core GPU. The lesser priced models have less storage and one less core on the GPU. Is that going
to
make
Renee's explanation is perfect? I won't even try to steal it. Go ahead, Renee.
Is it binning? Is that why?
Yeah. So it's just like it's the same reason why you got the A12X before you got the A12Z. Is that if they just went for the ones that had 8 cores, there would be lower yield and higher cost. So this way, they get more chips that they can use, and they can pass along those savings in a lower price.
Got it.
MacBook Air. So instead of segmenting based on clock speed, they're not doing that. You can buy the lowest end or the highest end. You're getting the same clock speed per core on the CPU and GPU. They're just saying if you want to save some money, you can have one with 7 GPUs instead of 8.
Okay. I, of course, got 8 GPUs because I need more. Well, I don't even know if it make any difference to me.
It's like cowbells.
Yeah, I need more GPU. What is interesting is they're putting the 16-core neural engine in every new Mac. That's the kind of thing you get on a phone. I'm not sure. And they made a big deal about that, machine learning and stuff. I don't do a lot of machine learning coding on my Macintosh.
But it's not the coding. It's going to be the image processing. It's going to be Final. It's going to be Pixelmator and Photoshop and Final Cut.
They'll benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, all the neural filters that they're doing now, like colorizing and super res zoom, it's everything that you can do on an iPhone camera now, you'll be able to do in post-process on one of these Macs.
Yeah. They talk a little bit about the pipelining. It's a big pipeline, a huge pipeline, and that could make a big difference in performance as well as the amount of L2 cache on chip, 16 billion transistors. I mean, if you say it's an A14, okay, but that's a third more than the A14.
Well, it's got the extra cores, and then it's got the Mac-specific silicon IP as well. And it's interesting because they didn't just spend their transistor budget on more. They saved some. Like it's efficient and performant. And Apple seems to really believe that you get performance through efficiency, that if you can keep that chip super efficient, it'll perform better because it's not overheating. It's not sucking down all the power. And I think they're proving that out now with these designs.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask Alex this because I think you're probably the one that will be most penalized by this. No eGPU support, no discrete GPU. How important is that to you? And do you think that the M1 GPU is going to be sufficient for some of your, all of your needs?
I don't buy computers expecting to put an eGPU in it. So the fact that a Mac Mini or one of these can't handle eGPU, I'm not really going to buy one of these expecting it to. If I'm going to buy one of these for the field, I might buy one so that I can, for me, the Mac Mini is going to be a really good Zoom head, you know, for bringing people into an event where I do think the GPU is probably going to perform better than the previous Mac Minis, which were pretty bad. Yeah. So
Intel's integrated graphics are so bad that anything Apple does is going to look better, probably.
It's better than Iris, that's our marching line.
Yeah, better than Iris, which is not saying much.
But I think that has me interested in the Mac Mac Mini is because I think I might actually get better performance than what I expected. But I don't buy computers expecting to add any GPUs, so it's not really that big of a deal to me. I will that be an issue down the road? I mean, I build machines sometimes with 4 dedicated cards, GPU cards.
I presume you could use a dedicated GPU on these, not these, but some generation.
The other question is that, you know, because Apple is pushing down a lot of those pipelines, we don't know what those other chips are going to look like. How many GPU, how many lanes are they going to have? How powerful are those GPUs going to be? And again, all of these things being integrated without having to go out to an external bus, without having to negotiate with external components, is going to save a lot of time.
Do you think Apple intends to eliminate the discrete GPU?
Yeah. Yep. I do. I mean, I think that you can put it in, but I think that I don't know if you'll need to for most things. Now, I think that on a Mac Pro, whatever chip goes into there may allow that because the Mac Pro is extensible. But I think that as they look at all the other chips, they're not going to really consider the eGPU as an external piece.
Not just eGPU, but even an AMD card in the case.
Well, I think that I don't know what the Mac Pro will do as far as that goes. But yeah. What I will say is that all the way up to that, they're not going to probably really support an eGPU because I think that an eGPU would actually slow them down.
Yeah.
You know, so I think
it's
got
to have a bus. It's going to suddenly.
It is a huge shift. It's like transferring files and you have two really fast computers and then you're passing right. it over the internet.
it sounds like their plan is we're just going to make better and better. I don't want to use integrated graphics, but we're going to make better and better GPUs on our chips. And you won't
look
need
at their
an
power.
External.
Like if you look at the power consumption of an AMD or NVIDIA, like if you look at Ampere or you look at Navi 2, they're 200 to 300 watt draw. And we've never seen Apple operate, I think, above 10 or 11 or 12 watts on an iPad. And I don't know what they're going up to on these, maybe 15 watts or something. But the amount of overhead that they have to fill before they even reach parity with the power draw of those cards is
and
ridiculous.
Also, when we're talking about GPUs, I mean, when I'm using an iPhone, I am pushing 2 million polygons. I'm doing AR tests with the iPhone, and I'm pushing 2 million polygons at 30 frames a second right now on the last generation of iPhone. I haven't even started on the 12 yet. And so that is an enormous amount of GPU power already in the phone, and that's not even nearly as powerful as what we have here. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of power, you know, to spare, you know, for what these machines specifically are capable of. And then we don't know how many lanes in the GPU and CPU are going to be available for larger chips.
And I keep telling people now, like, when I first heard about it, I thought it was funny. Then I did it and I was like, oh, this is not funny. This actually works. LumaFusion on the iPad to cut 4K stuff, right? I get my basics down. And so then I use the Final Cut XML export, open it up in Final Cut, slap some titles on, post to YouTube, pray I get as much views as Renee Ritchie. But it amazes me. Until I got this 2020 iMac like a month and a half ago, my iPad would run circles around my 2017 27-inch iMac with like 60-plus gigs of RAM. So when you start building the software that works for the chip, running at the right, you know, clip, doing everything as it should, it's faster than you think, people. And like you're trying to compare, well, I can't even get 4K streams to run on my computer. Yeah, but they just said that they did what did it say, 4K or 8K, two streams on
8K,
a
Air. Yeah.
Are you joking? 8K. Like, are you absolutely there's 8K cameras that can't play the 8K footage back. So I think people, again, are wrapping their head around what they know, and I fully understand you. I'm not claiming that you're dumb for that, but you need to let go. I do not call Leo by doing this anymore or going, can I get Lincoln 8573? No, fam. Stuff changes. It just changes.
There's still people that buy vinyl records and have turntables. There's always going to be people that will buy PCs with external graphics or discrete graphics cards. But
and again, I do think that there's going to be cases where you need to soup it up or where you need a lot of more control. I mean, I use Android phones for certain things because I need them to be customized. I have PCs for things that need to be customized or the apps only run on a PC. So it's not necessarily all one way or the other. But what I will say is that the performance is going to be really compelling. And again, the PC market is going to have a really hard time making that turn to compete with it. And if they really bring out these the Hodgman ads again, it's going to hurt a lot.
Can they still make trucks? Is Apple still going to make trucks?
These are trucks, really, but nice. I think the big problem is that we, like, these are trucks with really nice seats and cup holders.
These are luxury
stereo
trucks.
Systems.
These are Hummers.
Yeah, and so people want that. Like, yeah. They're not taking away the flatbed. They're not taking away the big, you know, bumpy tires. They're just making it real, real nice inside and giving that engine just as much power as they can give it. So it's like it's a really nice luxury truck.
When Mac OS came out, a whole new generation of application software started by Delicious Library, but came out that was beautiful, that was functional, that was skeuomorphic. It changed our expectations of software. And I'm wondering if this is going to change our expectations of software. If this means Adobe and the kind of the historic incumbents are going to be left in the dust, and the upcoming companies like LumaFusion and Pixelmator are going to be the next generation of tools.
The responsiveness is going to be unbelievable. Like, I think that's going to be one of the areas.
People are just not going to want to use Lightroom. They're going to say, why am I using Lightroom?
It's sluggish. It's slow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you're already getting that now.
Yeah.
You're getting that now. Yeah. Lumen, I can speak English. Skyloom, hello, AI Skyloom. Coming out in like a week.
Yeah.
Luminar, I always hated that word because it gets stuck in my face. I love Lightroom.
They'll
love
always
Lightroom.
Be Mac fun to me.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. It will always be Mac fun to me. I love Lightroom from the bottom of my soul. But you know what I use every day nowadays? I use Mac fun. and because what they're doing is different and it's incredible. And if I had to give it to somebody who isn't as pixel peeper as me to edit a photo, they can. You know, Lightroom is great when you're trying to protect your job. You don't want anybody else to be able to get in there. But if you want to be open and inclusive and let more people come in, because it actually expands the industry, for what my dad's ilk used to say about us hybrid shooters, now my dad, his Red sits on the floor. You know what he shoots with all the time? His Sony A7 IV, because it's better.
It's a nice camera, I got to admit. Your dad's got good taste.
And also at his age now, lugging the Red's no fun.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day.
He's probably my age.
It was the line. It separated you from the guys who were just playing. But if you ask him any day what he want to shoot with at 74, he's going to pick up that Sony and run around. It has a $6,000 Batis on the front, but that's a different conversation.
Ooh,
or
nice.
Otis. He uses Batis and Otis.
Wait, is your dad a pro? Guy.
Yeah, that's how I got this way. Yeah, 100%.
Because that's Batis, man. They're talking some heavy glass.
Yeah.
Some serious glass.
Well, and I think it's
just weird how the industry goes like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that Adobe's in a pretty delicate location, you know, because a lot of people like me bristle at the constant membership, you know, that I have to pay, for using that. And, you know, while we have a station that has After Effects and Premiere and other things, it's mostly just for getting things in and out of those apps. So, you know, most of our graphics work is all done in Motion. Our heavy duty technical stuff is all being done in Resolve and in DaVinci Resolve. And then the stuff that needs to be fast turns are all done in Final Cut. And the thing is Resolve is a good example of, for $300, I have an incredible amount of power.
And Resolve is M1 native. It's going to be M1 native.
Right. Yeah. And you're talking about apps that are M1 native that are also incredibly powerful and used in the industry. And then you also have, you know, Final Cut, again, that is with both Resolve and Final Cut, you're paying $300 once. You're not paying $50 a month, you know, for those things. And so, and then for Photoshop, you know, while I still have a copy of Photoshop, I spend more time in Affinity Photo than I spend in Photoshop at this point. You know, so I'm slowly transitioning because I'm trying to figure out, can I do it in Affinity Photo? And right now I can't do absolutely everything, but the things that I can do are a lot faster, you know? And so, and to get back to that, it's very responsive and very easy to use. And so I think that we're going to continue to see Adobe kind of having to kind of figure that out. Now, I will say that I found it interesting that they posted a bunch of videos about 3D, like the introduction to 3D. So I'm interested to see what Adobe's going to do, you know, with that.
They're going to go kicking and screaming, but I have a feeling we are headed into a great schism, a great separating, a culling, where there are going to be people that are going to go one way, and there's going to be this new way, this new Apple way, and there's going to be, you know, as soon as you start using LumaFusion or Pixelmator Pro, and you're just going to say, I don't need that old stuff.
On the other side,
there's going to be this great
split. On the previous transition, it was like, when is Microsoft Office? I'm desperate for it. In this transition, it's like, hey, as long as the browser works, I'm in Google Docs, I'm fine.
That's true.
Well, and we're also
just wondering if Leo was going to get all sparkly because he said we're going to have a great Cullen. So I was wondering if he was
the Cullen is coming.
Oh, I thought you meant like Team Edward Cullen.
I'm not familiar with that vampire.
Are you going to go all sparkly now?
Dracula and Lestat tell me he's not in the club, sir.
I'm more like thinking like Thanos here. We're just going to take half of the industry and chop it away.
Well, okay. And I think the other thing we haven't talked about at all, even within all of these things, is the AR capabilities and what's about to happen here. If you pop open your phone, your new Apple.
My new LiDAR phone, device. Yes.
Well, and you go, let's say you go to the Apple Apple USDZ examples. Just search that on Safari, Apple USDZ examples. and you click on one of those little objects in there, it pops out of your browser into the real world. And that LiDAR snaps it into place immediately. Immediately, like instantly you have whatever was there on your tabletop or on your floor. And that is the beginning. Imagine being able to do that right now. You can take those models and put them into your Motion project. And through Motion, you can put them into Final Cut. Final Cut and Motion are both using a 3D engine. And then in a, what we haven't seen yet, but I can't imagine not coming, is being able to have that 3D engine, that AR engine inside of Pages and inside of Keynote and maybe even Numbers. I don't know why you would do that, but the thing is that being able to start putting that kind of content, that 3D content, everywhere, and then you have, by having the USDZ inside of Motion and Final Cut, you already have tools that are able to create content, for that market.
That is a big, by the way, I had not tried this with the new phone, but you're right. Cool. That's instantaneous compared to how it used to be.
You come out of the web.
You're no longer waving your phone like an animal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's downloading. So it's going to be a ghost while it's downloading. And then boom, it's there.
And then boom, it's there.
Yeah.
Now, Matt,
I just had a biplane coming out of Alex's face.
Yeah. And it's got a shadow and it's really quite solidly attached to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the LiDAR.
Yeah.
It's not going to slide around. And so it, it's not just the performance of the desktops. It is going to be Apple starting to play a bunch of, games that are very hard for everyone else to play. Like, even if you look at some of the stuff around Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos, Apple, now you have AirPod Pros that are using Atmos. You have all the phones. I mean, if there was a race for HDR, that race is done.
I had somebody call me on the radio show saying, I got to buy a new TV with Dolby Vision because I've been shooting a lot on my iPhone and the HDR looks great on my iPhone, but I don't have a computer that can display it. So I need to buy a TV because I can't afford an XDR display.
Well, the issue is that the problem that everybody has now is that now there's going to be tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of people acquiring footage in 1,000 nits of brightness. Before it was like, oh, if they had the TV, if you lived in 100 nit world, which is a standard dynamic range, if you lived in 100 nit world, your whole world was kind of, there was the real world and then there was the 100 nit, it was kind of dark world, but you were used to it. The problem now is you have a phone that is constantly showing you what the difference is between 1,000 nits and 100 nits. And so the people's eyes are now getting trained to what 1,000 nits looks like. And the problem is that their TV is not going to be sufficient. Their computer is not going to be sufficient. And all of that. And the only thing they're going to know is vision now. And they're not going to know what HDR 10 is or HDR 10 plus or HLG or any of these other formats. And so, but the reason that that's important for manufacturers is HDR 10 is mostly, we don't want to pay Dolby's licensing, right? So you have Dolby Vision, but the problem that they're going to have is that the consumers are only going to know what Dolby Vision is at this point because Apple's pushing it down the path. And so Apple's forcing these other manufacturers to pony up, or be seen as falling behind. And so Apple, and then the same thing with the chip. So Apple's forcing everybody else to play a game that Apple plays better than they do. And that's going to be an interesting mark for the next decade.
You know how you know this is true, Alex? I find myself looking for things on my iPad that when I listen to it and turn my head, it will respond. Yeah. I notice it's so gimmicky.
The AirPod
does that.
You're trying to get the AirPod Pro surround sound.
I use this all the time.
Spatial sound.
As a person who grew up in the industry, I should know that this is a gimmick and this just stop, but I can't help it. I'm like, oh, look, it works. It works. Oh, my goodness.
The HomePods do that now, too. The spatial audio is amazing.
Shut up.
Yeah.
We're embargoed. Don't say that.
What is that? What is that candle? He's holding a scented candle.
HomePod Mini, yeah.
Well, so
they're so cute.
Shake it and ask a question.
Yeah. Magic 8-Ball says...
Maybe it'll tell me a bad joke.
The minis aren't quite as good as the main HomePods as far as recreating a surround sound. But we've had not myself, but someone in the office hours, TJ Asher has a discrete Atmos system, so 10 speakers in his home theater, and he put two HomePods in there to compare them, head to head. And he said, the HomePods aren't the same, but he was amazed at at how close the HomePods got to a discrete system because
mine up.
They can hear it. They can hear the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, but I, to the dog's point though, I do this all the time now. I do this thing with my head where I go, as soon as I pop up a video that I know is coming from, I don't know what the platform is. I immediately go back and forth in my head and I go, oh, it's just stereo.
All the Windows users are feeling really bad right now. So we're going to have to figure out something here to make them happy. Oh, I got something. Big Sur came out on Thursday and it was kind of a mess.
They tried to.
We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Is this going to be an Apple show the whole freaking time? Yeah, probably. Probably. Go play Minesweeper. You got a solitaire game.
Play Minecraft. That's Microsoft.
Minecraft. I like Minecraft. Although I have to say Animal Crossing is my new Minecraft. Building that island up. Doing a little terraforming.
Trust me, do not add a volcano to your island. Just speaking from experience.
Can you add a volcano to your island? If you can, I'm doing it. Oh, you have one on your island. Yeah.
Well, it's on one island over, but every time it goes, I can't breathe for like a week.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. Yeah, good point. Okay, if they offer me a volcano, I'll turn it down. How about that? Doc Rock is here. Where can we see your dad's photography? Do you mind giving him a plug?
He's retired. He's retired now, but he used to support a lot of the TV and film guys that would come to Hawaii to shoot. He did a lot of stuff in Asia. Originally worked at KBS in Korea and C21, which is another production company. Nice. He's been in the game for a long time. Retired maybe like 10 years ago.
So now he just wanders the beach with his A7 Mark IV and his Batis lens. And
it's funny. It's funny because I was like, look at this old guy. Then all of a sudden he'll bust out a drone. I forgot the name of it. It's the one, the AK drone. They're like, where'd that old guy get a drone like that from? But
does he have a Phantom? What does he have? Oh, it's 8K.
Oh, it's Inspire.
He has a DJI Inspire. Oh, nice.
The big monster. But it's just hilarious because no one's expecting, this OG to just reach it. And he carries everything in a plastic bag from the grocery store. And so that way it looks inconspicuous. And then it just, you're just, and I'm just like, man, you're cracking me up.
8K,
I think it's funny.
8K. Our show today brought to you by my good night's sleep. I tell you, if I couldn't get a good night's sleep, I don't know if I could do these shows. But thank goodness I have a Casper. Casper, you've heard of Casper, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products at not so outrageous prices, from award-winning mattresses to pillows. I actually have a love affair going with my Casper king size pillow. It says, get off of me. I said, no, I'm holding on to you. The sheets, the duvets, the dog beds. Casper's got it all. They even have those great glow lamps. They transform the way we sleep, one snooze at a time. Bedding, bed frames. Here I am with my brand new Casper King. Look at it. That's a king size mattress in a pretty compact box. It's one of the reasons I love Casper. I mentioned this before. I got it for my son when he went away to college. He said, Dad, the mattress in this dorm is disgusting. I said, there's help on the way. And he was able to just kind of, he's on the second floor, lifted up the stairs and replaced the mattress. And it was so affordable. After 4 years, he said, what should I do with the mattress? I said, leave it there for the next guy. He deserves a good mattress. Every Casper mattress is designed with a system to react and adapt to your body. Look at how it fits perfectly all night long. You know what I'm lying on right there? 1,501 perforations. I counted them to create a cooling system so effective you won't even notice it. You won't be awake. Sleeping cool is really important. Only Casper mattresses are made with 86 supportive gel pods to align your spine and eliminate aches and pains. It does something remarkable. It gives where it needs to give, and it supports where it needs to support. That's what you want. The two combined seem like contradictory, but really they're quite good. It's the cooling, supportive comfort you need for the most refreshed feeling come morning. Even Samantha, our cat, loves Casper. Actually, both cats were on the Casper this morning. With over 20,000 reviews, an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google, Casper is rapidly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And the best thing is, You don't have to try the mattress in the mattress store with a salesperson staring at you, giving them the stink eye because you spent three extra minutes. No, you get 100 nights risk-free. That's their sleep-on-it trial. Anytime in that 100 nights, if you say, it's not for me, you call them up. They come. They take it away. You don't have to put it back in the box. Don't worry. And they'll refund you every penny. Casper offers free shipping and painless returns to the U.S. and Canada. And now with 0% APR financing options, it's even easier to try a Casper mattress. Wouldn't this be a nice surprise for your loved ones? Honey, honey, go lie down. See how you feel. Casper. Go to casper.com/twit1. Use the code TWIT1, for $100 off select mattresses. Casper, CASPER.com/twit, $100 off select mattresses. Code twit1. Of course, as always, terms and conditions apply. See casper.com/terms for all the terms. But that is such a nice mattress. You're going to feel so good. You're going to love your Casper. Get it for the winter and enjoy it through the summer. Casper.com/twit1. Thank you, Casper. Thank you, Casper, for supporting the podcasts all year long. Patrick Wardle, who is one of my favorite Apple security guys. He works at Jamf, but he's also the creator of some great software at objective-c.com, tweeted, "This is true," tears pouring out of the sad face. "Previously, a comprehensive macOS firewall could be implemented via a kernel extension. That was then. This is now. Under Big Sur, Apple has deprecated KEXs, giving us network extensions, but apparently many of their apps and daemons bypass the filtering mechanism." This goes along with news after Big Sur came out that anytime you open a program, Apple checks with their certificate server, OCSP server, to see if the developer certificate's legit and if it's been notarized. And because so many people were downloading Big Sur, it seems to have affected the OCSP server. Everything slowed to a crawl. It's designed to fail open. So if you're not online, you won't even know. Or if you block it with Patrick's Lulu or Little Snitch, you won't even know because it says, I can't get the certificate, so I'm not going to bother. But if it's slow, it keeps trying. And your software. Now, I read about this on Thursday. I didn't notice it. I asked my wife, is your Mac slow? I didn't notice it. Any of you guys notice the slowdown on Thursday?
No. I think it was this is interesting to me, like, on two ways. One is, I think there was an architectural failure in the way that it was designed, because like you said, if it didn't get a response from the internet, it would just fail, like, safe. Like, you would just keep going.
Yeah.
But if it didn't get but didn't get a response, maybe it thought there was some sort of chicanery, like malware was trying to stop it from communicating and it would fail secure. But that should have been something that was architected into it. But I dislike the reporting on this so much. It was one of those classic examples of my mom watching BBC and CNN and my YouTube comments filling up with Apple is spying on us.
It said things like, every time you launch an app, Apple gets a hash of the app's name and your geolocation, time and date. And that is not true. And it was
Apple doesn't retain any of that data
whether Apple retains it or not.
Yes.
We have to trust Apple that they don't retain it. And maybe I trust Apple, but whether they retain it or not, it isn't. And by the way, Microsoft pretty much does do that and even admits that they do that. Apple's doing it for security reasons. This is part of system integrity protection and gatekeeper. Yes. But
and anti-malware.
And it doesn't do it all the time. It does it the first, it periodically will check the developer certificate. It doesn't necessarily know what you launched because all Adobe apps have the same developer certificate. But many apps can be identified by the developer certificate. So Apple is getting some information.
It's not tied to you. Like, my understanding is that it's very similar to how their other operations work, where there is a unique but time-limited hash that lets it know that these things are happening together. But again, they say they don't retain it.
It could be tied to you. They've got the IP address. By the way, it's not sent, and this is the other problem, it can't be sent encrypted because the OCSP server also does a certificate approval for HTTPS, so you would have an endless loop if you send it encrypted. So it has to send it over HTTP. And that also raises the issue that it's not just Apple that may be seeing this. Your ISP will see this traffic. Anybody in between you and Apple will see this traffic. So maybe Apple's not malicious with it, but this traffic is being sent out.
Yeah, that should be better architected. The other part about the little snitch and stuff, like, again, like if you look at this through the lens of appliance computing, I spoke to a bunch of people about this and they're like, if I'm serious about the security, I'm not running anything on my Mac. I'm running this at the router level because I have 800 different devices in my house and I'm not just blocking one MacBook Air. I'm blocking the stuff from everything in the house. And the only way to do that is a router. So
you could do that. You could block it. It would fail. But by doing so, you would be defeating system integrity protection.
Yeah, but I mean, if you were paranoid about, like, for most people, like, as much as we like to believe that we are a hard target for everyone out there on the internet, most people could care less what we had for breakfast. So, but if you do, if you have a reason to believe, like, we had this discussion with Dave Nanian of SuperDuper. He really opened my eyes on this. He's like, do not encrypt your backup drive. And I'm like, but why? Encryption is good. And he's like, no, nobody cares about your kids' photos but you. And once you encrypt that, if anything happens to it, those photos are lost forever. For your personal, private, highly mobile data, encrypt that completely. For like stuff that's super, like that, for stuff that would cause a divorce if you ever lost it, make sure that that is kept in a way that you can recover it. And this is similar. Like there are certain things that for people, like anti-malware is more important for the vast majority of people. If you are the person for whom zero knowledge is critically important, you should be doing this on the router
or using Linux. Because Windows does something very similar.
But you might want a switch. You might want a Mac. Like you might want a bunch of stuff in your. Maybe your kid is on.
Yeah,
a switch.
Do it at the router. You can block it at the router.
Yep.
But again, you're disabling this kind of a vital protection against malware.
Well, you don't have to
disable
it. Like you just let SIP run on your Mac. Like, you don't care. It's like it's just. Like,
but it's no longer checking. It can no longer check the certificates.
Yeah, it just thinks you're.
Or the notarization.
Offline.
Everything is not notarized. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So if you had malware. Yeah. That was not notarized, wouldn't matter.
But I'm guessing if you're that high, like, so yes, if you're really dumb, like if you're dumb paranoid, don't do this. But if you're really smart, you know, you're engaging in best practices and malware is not your issue. Like there are some people for whom their data being stolen is far more of a worry than their data being lost. Lost is far more of a worry, use every commercially available, like run it like an appliance. If being stolen,
this is the fork on the road. This is the appliance fork. We are at that fork.
And the other thing is that the last couple months I had to really think about security for our computers, and you know it really became a, you know, because we were in a position where we were possibly targets of state actors, and so the issue is that you get into this situation where if you're really going to be serious about it, like if you're actually interesting, you need to you know, our computers were completely separated from all the other computers. You weren't allowed to talk to the outside world. They were, unless they had to. And when they did, they went through, you know, there was all these rigorous, you know, the way that the passwords work and the way that you assess things and what you install, and all these things become something that every single piece, if you're not going to do all of those things, you're leaving gaping holes open. And the only reason most of us don't get hacked is because we're not interesting. to Renee's point, is that generally, we are one thing became very clear of over the last 6 months is that in general, most of us live in a pretty wide open space, you know. And so there's a couple things to do there. One is to be relatively knowledgeable about what you're downloading. Another thing is to, you know, it's taking those basic, you know, financial theft is something that you're probably more apt to be in trouble for. And also, I would say, don't be interesting. Like don't go to websites that aren't, you know, like the thing is online is that, you know, I used to be very, very like, how do I stay off the grid and how do I stay disconnected and everything else? And I learned that the best thing to do is just not do anything online that I can't back up, you know, because it's just, there's a, you know, when you look at all these things, people start to feel like they're secure. You're not secure. You're not secure online. If someone wants to, you know, like you're not secure online. Like as soon as you go out there, you're not. It's the wild, wild west, and so you just have to kind of think about what you're doing and what you're connecting to, and make sure that you're doing things that are defensible.
So let's talk a little bit about the change in, and this is Patrick Wardle's tweet and all that. The change in how firewalls work. Little Snitch still works. Lulu still works. I have Lulu running on my Big Sur Mac, but apparently it's not as effective as it used to be because it's not a kernel extension.
It's in userland now, yeah.
It's in userland. So, A, Apple can bypass it. And then Patrick says, if Apple can bypass it, then there is always the theoretical possibility that malware or bad actors could bypass it as well.
But if it's at the kernel level, then there's possibility that bad actors can access your kernel. I mean, this is like the trade-offs that we make all the time.
Right.
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 And if you're that paranoid, switch to the new chip, because then there's no executables written for it yet. Although they say changing the executables is fast, right now they don't exist. So if it's that paranoid, then just get new chip.
Actually, Big Sur, which I'm not the biggest thing people will notice is the cosmetic changes, which I'm not a fan of. Yeah. I find it hard to read the menu now. All the text is thin and the colors are pastel and it's just not as good. But that's fine. I'll get used to it. But there is this big shift that is probably good for security in Apple's new Mac OS 11. And they started this in Catalina. You probably noticed it. If you ever looked at your disk with a disk util, you've got two volumes now. You've got a read-only system volume, and you've got everything else, and they're separated. And actually, more and more, we're running into problems with anytime you run a program, this program needs access to your document folder. What? You mean I have to give it permission? Yes, you do. Suddenly, there's all of these permissions that are involved. Probably we should learn not to give full disk access to every app that asks for it, I suppose. But that's...
And now photos on iOS, even. Like, you want to give them access to a few photos or all your photos?
Yeah. They've really gotten granular. And now this read-only system partition is signed by Apple and can only be signed by Apple. So one of the first things I wanted to do with Big Sur is a clean install. Forget it, Leo. You're not going to get to do it. You have to turn off boot. In order to boot to a USB key, there's all of these processes you have to go through. I ended up just saying, okay, fine. And it is in effect a clean install because this read-only partition is replaced with another read-only partition. Only Apple can sign it, which also means you'll no longer be able to make bootable backups because it won't boot because it's not signed by Apple. The workaround, according to Mike Bombich at Carbon Copy Cloner, is to make a backup of your disk and install Big Sur onto the backup. And that'll make it bootable because Apple will sign it when you install Big Sur onto it.
Yeah.
So there are some big shifts in the underlying security model, big shifts in the other. Probably, again, for the best, but it's the appliance
for
model.
For consumer electronics, it's for the best. But for traditional computers, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
And there's always this layer of, that you always have to be careful of, is that when you turn the security up too high, people stop using it, because it's difficult. And so that's always going to be, some people are going to try to opt out of things or get laissez-faire about opting out of things because they don't want to deal with that. So it's always a matter. And I think what Apple's doing a lot of times is by embedding it all into that process, that they're kind of doing it for you. And again, the average person is going to be not going to care, and they're probably better off with it. If you're a geek, then it may be more of a problem. If you really wanted to dive in,
Jeffrey.
As long as it doesn't slow down performance, I don't think people should just get bent all out of shape over it. I mean, yes, we are starting to miss some of that granularity and some of that control, but we're also getting past stages where you need that. Now, I got it. If you're not on Wi-Fi, rebooting when you don't have an internet connection with modern devices is a pain in the butt. But as long as you have a connection, it rebuilds itself using the recovery server. So you don't really need that bootable USB anymore. Although in the very beginning, I screwed up this brand new computer out of the box, trying to do a time machine backup, which I never do, but I was lazy and it did not like that, the switch to Catalina with the two volumes, the container.
Yeah.
But luckily, because I have a Docker-based server in the back and I know how Dockers work, I just had to think of it.
Oh, there's like a fix. Docker. Everybody should just be running Docker, and then you don't have to worry about this.
Yes. I just like the name, to be honest.
I like the whale icon. That's what I like. So that actually is another issue that we, will probably bite people. I think what Apple's doing, though, is probably going to be for the best, but there's going to be some bumps. If you're using Time Machine, for instance, Time Machine will now use APFS, but in order to do that, you have to turn off Time Machine, erase the hard drive, turn it back on, reformat the hard drive, APFS, and turn it back on. But at that point, Time Machine is actually what it should have been all along, a real snapshot thing instead of a bunch of hard symlinks and weird folders. So there's going to be a bunch of bumps along the way, I think. Be ready.
And Apple allows for short-term pain if they believe there's long-term gain more than like than Microsoft or companies like that. Like they're willing to cut those. They are willing to burn those boats to get to the future.
Well, partly because they know that Mac users probably will be willing to put up with it to a certain degree. I feel like though we are at the fork in the road, and this is Jeffrey yes. Paul here. Maybe this is a little bit sensationalized. He's a hacker living in Berlin. Your computer, he writes at sneak.berlin, isn't yours. It's here. It happened. Did you notice the world Richard Stallman predicted in 1997, the one Cory Doctorow also warned us about? And he's talking about how Mac OS, you know, basically has a mind, has a life of its own. He overstated what was going on. This was one of the blog posts that said more information is being sent to Apple.
Well, I guess the question is, does he? Do the users that buy it care?
No.
And I just don't think that they, you know, I think that that's the issue is that they don't, you know, they're fine with it. I mean, in the same way that people are fine, that people use Facebook. I mean, Facebook is just,
or they use Chromebooks. Like a Chromebook is a completely managed environment and it's better for some people.
In fact, that's why I recommend the Chromebook. It's a signed, booter. Yeah. You can't modify the operating system without the Chromebook saying, hey, you've been hacked. You can power wash it. Yeah, it's completely an appliance. Yeah. I guess the problem, there's a little disconnect because a lot of Mac users started using a Mac.
Yes.
Because it was a Unix machine. You know, it wasn't an appliance very much so. I don't think it's bad that it's an appliance now, but it is something to be aware of, I guess. Let's take another little break. Now we can stop talking about Apple.
Thank goodness.
Thank God. I'm so sick of it. Now we can get mad at Google.
That's coming. We can drag Google for the rest of the show.
We're going to drag Google for a little while. ReneeRitchie.com. No, sorry. Do you have a ReneeRitchie.com? You should have one.
.net and .com forwards to the .net.
Okay. And will that then forward to YouTube.com/ReneeRitchie?
No, but I post all the videos there so that you can at least see them, and a lot of the transcripts so you can read them if you don't like watching
the
video.
So maybe we should now have your lower third say ReneeRitchie.net.
I think only like three people go there, but yeah. I think YouTube is just easier for people because it matches their expectations. I put the website up as sort of an accessibility feature.
I like it. Look at this. It's nice. I didn't even know you did this. It's the Baby Yoda phone. Do you like the Mini?
It really is. I do. If I didn't have big photograph and big battery needs, I would be on the Mini.
Yeah, Gruber said that he thought the Max was too big. And it is big. It's heavy. It's like a fine German automobile. It's I like the bigness of it. Yeah.
And that camera.
Man, have you taken a lot of low light pictures with it?
Yeah, but the funniest thing with the camera was that you saw this stark divide in the community because like MKBHD, Marquez Brownlee, Peter McKinnon, and a couple other people said there's no difference in the camera. And then Neely Patel and Matthew Panzerino and a couple others said there's a big difference. And it turned out that people with kids and pets were trying to photograph their kids and pets, and people without them were photographing like their computers. And with the IBIS, it was making a huge difference if you were going after a moving target, but not at all if you were going after a stationary one.
Oh. You know what? I've got a lot of pictures of pets. So there you go. And the Deep Fusion does really nice on cat fur.
It does. And also, like the new IBIS, the in-body stabilization is really good for,
especially for low light,
for catching those moving targets. Yeah.
And I like the blue. I got the blue. I think that's
me too. It's gorgeous. Actually, I have the gold. I bought the blue, but this is the Apple one is gold, and the one I bought myself is blue.
Yeah. I did gold last year. All right. Let's take a little teeny weeny break. Doc Rock is also here. YouTube.com/Doc Rock. Or do you have a website too that you're not telling anybody about?
It's Doc Rock Tips. I need to update it, but I've been so busy making YouTube videos and everybody just goes there anyway. It's the live stream thing. Like, yeah. Things that I used to have to type, I could just say it out live now.
I feel like YouTube is just it's a world I don't know or understand. I feel like
you pioneered it, Leo. Like you're here talking
you
right now.
You predate YouTube.
Well, that's why I don't understand about it.
Yeah. And I was trying to explain that to somebody today from what was that show? The science-y type thing with you and Soledad O'Brien, and you went to Tech TV.
Oh yeah, the site.
And yeah, that's what it was.
I was Dev Null, the virtual character. Yeah.
And then Call for Help. Like, you predate YouTube. I mean, like,
yeah, but now
computers like, doing video, all of that. You're there, man. You're the king.
Like, predate YouTube, like Nikola Tesla predated electricity.
Yeah, but he got a sick car with just horrible fittings.
And it's so nice to see my old pal Alex Lindsay come up for air now that the election's over and you stopped doing things that were under attack by nation states. I can't wait to buy you a drink and find out what the hell you were doing. It's nice to see you again. 090 Media at Alex Lindsay, and you still do the office hours. Find out about that in his Twitter feed at Alex Lindsay or on his YouTube page.
And if you want to see the office hours, you just go to youtube.com/Alex Lindsay. That's also, we all have our name, just youtube.com/our name. And
that's the culture.
We put 6 days a week, we go ahead and stream most of it. So you can watch most of the episodes, a couple hours a day of content that we're pushing up. And it's a pretty interesting group of people that we've kind of collected. So there's 20 to 30 panelists who represent a couple centuries of media production that are all answering people's questions. That's all we do. We just get up there and say, hey, if you don't ask any questions, it's going to be a really short show. And somehow people ask 20 or 30 questions a day, and we do the best we can to answer them. And so everything from HDR and Atmos to what drive should I buy for my Mac, and my phone doesn't do this, or I'm having trouble with Zoom. And so whatever the audience comes up with as far as questions go, we answer them.
And I'm at youtube.com/Leo Laporte. Where I haven't posted in years. Years, I tell you.
You have all the Twitch channels. You're on every day.
Yeah.
We got a lot of
YouTube.com/Twitch. There's a lot of channels there. I should probably be preparing like kind of a post-Twit, like separate from Twit, like blog and YouTube channel. I mean, I have all that stuff, but I don't put anything there just in case they fire me. I mean, I'm just thinking I should, you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. We had a good week this week on Twitch. John, do you have a little mini movie maybe that you could show people that would help them understand what they missed?
And in the other corner, it's the smoking hot Xbox Series X and S. Either smoking hot because it's totally awesome or because it's literally smoking.
Hold on. I'm ripping a sweet.
Oh, don't put your vape. Don't put your. Oh, man.
Previously on Twit. Twit News.
Well, now it's time for the Mac to take a gigantic leap forward. Well, today, we are incredibly excited to announce our first step in this transition with our first chip designed specifically for the Mac, M1.
All right, so the rumors
M1
were wrong.
M1 has been optimized.
The M1 chip powering three new Apple devices, starting with their most popular, the MacBook Air.
This Week in Google.
There was a story about TikTok in the news today saying, hello, and what's going on? Tomorrow, you're supposed to put us out of business.
They could just shut up and be quiet, or they can just continue to attack them and say, hey, look, we put our necks out there. You're putting all of this ridiculous information out there about us. We got business to run.
All about Android.
Happy birthday, Android. You're 13 years old now. This is a huge milestone. You're officially a teenager.
Android's voice is all cracking right now. Thanks a lot, Flo.
Twit.
Thank you, Jim Cutler. Oh, he's so great. And please, Microsoft has published a alert, a warning. Do not blow vape smoke into your Xbox Series X.
It's crazy. Because that's what I would always think of doing. Now, I'm just going to vape into my
Look,
into
it's
my
smoking,
Xbox.
Man. It's smoking.
It's probably not a good idea to vape in the first place and then add that to not go to your Xbox.
I really would love either an Xbox or a place. I really wanted. I got up early, midnight, on Wednesday. Was it Wednesday night, Thursday morning, and spent an hour refreshing Target and Walmart, hoping I could get in there and order, but no. Ugh. You got one, Renee? Did they send you that too?
No, I don't see. That's the curse of covering Apple. If they don't get any of the
none of the
stuff
good
from
stuff.
Anybody else.
Yeah. How about you, Doc Rock? Did you get a PlayStation 5?
No, but I did want Justine's Xbox refrigerator, though.
I didn't see that.
Oh, my goodness.
There's three in the world. Justine has one, Snoop Dogg has one, and they're giving one away.
Right? And I only wanted it because I wanted it partially because Justine had any other parts because Snoop's. But I'm really curious what's inside Calvin's What's inside his... It's not the what is inside his heart, I could tell you that.
Wait a minute. It's not like I would think like a college refrigerator. It's a it's a big refrigerator.
It's an Xbox Series X sized refrigerator, Leo.
So okay, again, not
will,
a YouTube
I will say that-
expert, but what does Marques Brownlee say when he sees this?
Oh, he was jealous.
He's got all sorts of other stuff.
How come I don't get a refrigerator? He says. This is actually a great shot of a puzzled Justine would, and her sister I looking would, at this thing and saying, what the hell? What did I just get? Was that UPS dropping off this giant thing? It's on a pallet.
I would say that I she has a very, very clean
garage.
Garage.
Yeah.
Yeah. With her little Tesla charger.
Yeah. John, you know, Alex discovered Justine, by the way. I just want to point out.
I think she was on her way no matter what.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
Oh, there we go.
She's got like a, what is that, a cleaver?
Knives are on brand for her.
Very on brand, yeah. It's the unboxing of a giant refrigerator.
It's holy a, it really cow. Is a giant refrigerator?
Wait a minute. Let's, yeah, it really is. I'll jump ahead here. Let's see. It's going to take him a while to unbox this thing. It is. It's a fridge. Does it look like an Xbox? Can you yes. blow oh, vape you smoke
see,
into it?
Did you see the power button?
Oh, my God.
That's because you're standing next to the fridge, girl.
Yeah, get away. Get away from the fridge.
And it's all...
That's hysterical. That was
if you look at the number of views, that was the most... That was the least expensive promotion.
3 million views.
Right.
Nice.
In the last couple of weeks, yeah.
But does this make you want to run out and buy an Xbox? No.
It makes me want that fridge.
I want
the fridge.
It's just kind of like brand promotion, I guess.
Yeah.
Mine would be full of bourbon, but that's okay.
And then what happens to this? Does she give it back? I mean, what are you going to do with this thing?
She's promoting a contest where you can win one.
Oh, she's going to give it away.
Not this one. I think there's a third one that gets given away. This one she's just been doing. She made cakes and had Xbox cakes in the fridge, and it's just this whole bunch of promotional stuff.
It's a nice fridge. It's probably a Sub-Zero, right? They just... painted it. All right.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
All right. I should have gotten into YouTube when I had a shot. I don't want. What would I do with a giant Xbox fridge? That's the problem. You look at those things and you go, oh, but I'd love to be on that gravy train. And then when you are, you go, what am I going to do with all this crap?
I don't know. The thing is, like, when you get your first case to review and you're like, oh my God, I got a case. And then when you get 400 dropped
exactly.
on you at once.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you. I want to tell you about the only credit card I use if I shop online. The only one. It's aptly named Privacy. Privacy.com. This is going to be a big online shopping holiday season, right? We're all staying home, shopping online, not just shopping online, donating to charities, supporting small businesses. But you really want to do that safely. You protect your financial life online with Privacy, privacy.com/twit. It lets you generate unique credit cards every time you shop. There are two things you can do. You can have it a one-time use credit card. Boom, it's done. You use that credit card, it's done. It looks just like a regular MasterCard or Visa card to the merchant, except they don't get any of your information. I like that too. And boom, it can never be used again. Or you can make a credit card that's tied to the merchant. So I have an Amazon privacy card. I have a privacy card for my Comcast subscription for anytime I shop online, for all the cases and so forth, privacy.com. What's great about this, I also use it to sign up for subscriptions. You know how that is when you sign up for a subscription and then you forget to renew it. And years later, you're going, why am I paying $5 a month for this? Well, with privacy.com, you can just pause that credit card anytime. And that's it. It's over. You'll never be accidentally billed twice, upgraded to another service without your consent. You can set spending limits per month, per year, per charge. You'll also, anytime somebody uses your card at a different merchant, you'll immediately get notifications. You can see all the declined uses, and you'll immediately know how somebody's got that card and start using a new one. If you just pause your privacy card, they'll block the charges anytime you don't want to use that card anymore, or you can delete the card. You can create a merchant or a single-use card. easy to do. There's a privacy Chrome extension. There's I use the Firefox extension. It will automatically fill out the credit card information for you, including number, the security, three-digit or four-digit security code. It's also got built-in sharing. So, for instance, I like to buy my mom dinner. So I send her a card using privacy straight from the dashboard in just a few clicks. No copy, no paste, no screenshots. She doesn't have a privacy account. She doesn't need one. It's a regular credit card. And I say, Mom, dinner's on me tonight. Beautiful. It's easy to track how much you've been spending with their account summary feature. You can create custom tags so you completely organize this. It's just the best, safest way to make purchases online. Ties to your U.S. checking account or your debit card. I should mention that. It's not a charge card. The money is immediately withdrawn. But, you know, you shouldn't probably be using charge cards because the interest rates are so high. This is just like using a debit card. You can have a limit, though, on it. You can assign it to a merchant. You could say it's only can be used once, and that's a beautiful thing. They have a variety of account levels. I get 1% cash back, more than pays for the pro card level that I use. To me, this is just the way you should be shopping online. Privacy.com/TWIP. Sign up for an account. If you are a business, they have a card issuing API you can use. They have a business size card you can give to your employees, that kind of thing. And incidentally, just to encourage you to use that special address, you'll get $5 to spend on your first purchase, but you have to go to privacy.com/twit. That way they know you saw it here. You get the $5 and we get the pat on the head. Thank you. You did good, Twit. Privacy.com/twit. I could not recommend this more highly. I've been using it for years, and I just feel safer shopping online using it. All my holiday shopping will be done with privacy.com. On we go with the show. This is a big story that Google kind of dropped on people this week, and I think there's some upset. If you were using Google Photos because of their unlimited storage, it's over. Starting in June, Google will count that storage against your Google Drive storage. No more free unlimited storage. We used to tell people with iPhones.
Yeah.
I get calls all the time from people saying, oh, my phone's full. I need a new phone. No, put Google Photos on there. It uploads all your photos. And it even has a button that says delete the photos that are backed up, and it saves space on your phone. But now it's the same as iCloud. You're going to pay for the storage that you're using.
So first they make icons that even a graphic designer can't tell apart. And now this, Leo, are they at war with us?
They're at war. They hate their users. You get free with Google Drive, free 15 gigabytes. Honestly, it's fairly affordable, and I pay for it. If you had a Pixel phone back in the day, you'd get unlimited original storage. Anything you've got stored there is going to stay there. It's new stuff that's going to start counting against your Google Drive.
My mom just got the warning. It popped up and said she ran out of Gmail space because she's one of those people who just sends countless GIFs.
Yeah, it's shared with Gmail. Yeah. It was shared with all your stuff.
So I have to go in and subscribe her to get her to go back on track.
Willa Ramis writing on Medium at 1-0 says, this is Google's anti-competitive behavior. I don't think I agree with this, but he said Google Photos crushed a lot of other photo storage services on the way to the top because they were free. So they put them out of business, and now they're going to charge. I guess that is kind of classic anti-competitive behavior. I don't even remember EverPix or Loom or Picture Life, but he says those startups basically could not compete against free. 1 billion people use Google Photos. And I guess once you have all those photos there, you're kind of duty-bound to keep using it. Amazon still offers unlimited free original storage if you're an Amazon Prime member. Sites like Shutterfly that do photo printing will let you store unlimited photos there as well. So there are still some competitors. But do you think this is anti-competitive of Google, that this is, as Willa Ramis says, Google just made the case for breaking up big tech?
I have to admit, I don't think that there was a big conspiracy with Google. I think they just realized
they're not that organized, kids.
They're like, wow, we're spending a lot of money on storage, you know. Yeah. And there's a lot of there's a lot of energy being consumed to do 28 billion photos a week or something like that.
Yeah.
It's so at some point you do have to, and again, the stuff that's been there for 2 years that you haven't touched, that you're not paying for starts to really add up to a lot of storage and a lot of power and a lot of other things. And so, you know, while I could be theoretically upset if stuff disappeared, I don't know.
I mean, it's, at least so far, they're going to let you keep your stuff there.
Yeah, I think they talked about if you don't touch it for 2 years, or they're going to send you a bunch of emails, right, and then right. they're going to delete it. And
what does touching it mean? Do I have to look at every photo? I got 60,000 photos on Google Photos. I got a terabyte. Account. If you don't use your account,
I have probably 12 or 15 Google accounts. It's not uncommon to have a bunch of accounts. I mean, it's uncommon to have that many, but it's not uncommon to have a couple.
As somebody in the chat room saying, JBC the third. Hey, it's Google. They could have just said, hey, starting in June 2021, there's no more Google Photos. They didn't do that.
Right. You'd be happy.
Like Reader. Remember Google Reader? They all went out of business and then they canceled Reader.
Or Wave.
Yeah. Or Wave. Or a lot of things.
But I don't think Wave put anybody out of business.
Right.
But, well, you know, the funny part about this, I think that no one wants to wrap their head around the reason why you're upset. Let's be honest. I like to be honest, okay? The reason why you're upset is because Google wants to take away, let's just say, 2 terabytes of your photos because you stored them there for free because you didn't want to buy a hard drive for you to store them at your house. So you're mad that someone else is going to stop paying for your storage.
Yeah.
Bro, that's a good terabyte point. Drive is $50 at Costco right now. I was there yesterday. Go get it. Press download. Get it all. And then start again. Like, take what's up there on there off and then put the new stuff. You got 15 gigs. But, I mean, yeah, you're complaining because you're mad they're not going to hold your hand anymore.
All right.
Yeah, I think that the fact that they did it for so long is quite a feat. And I would never put anything. I want to pay for things. I have to admit, I don't want things for free because I want to know that they're going to last. Like, if we're paying for it, I have a better sense that they're going to actually be there next week, as opposed to if it's free, it's just a draw on resources. Eventually, something's going to happen.
I think customers are worse than their free customers typically. Like, I had a paid Google account for a while, and we got features later. They didn't work well. They would cause problems with new Android devices when you logged on with your paid account versus your free account. Free as in Google has turned out to be a really interesting thing because it's enabled access to services that a lot of people financially just wouldn't or couldn't afford. But the capriciousness with which Google annihilates those services, I think, is something you always have to remember before you go in. Like, go in with your eyes wide open. Take advantage of it, but never depend on it.
And Renee, can you tell people this? Because for them, they're not going to listen to me. This is the tenth time, maybe longer. I've just picked a random number out of the sky because whatever number I picked is higher than that. That free stuff either stopped becoming free or died. So when you realize that there is no free, not a one.
Here's the Killed by Google site, killedbygoogle.com, with all 218. CloudPrint, remember that? Killed by Google. Google Play Music, remember that?
Big one because they destroyed a lot of RSS readers and then they went away and it's taken a while to ramp back up.
Yeah. I mean, this has gone on. Google just killed their Expedition, which I thought was a really cool VR tool. Oh, should we show the we got 1 minute to the launch. We should probably show the Crew Dragon is about to launch this time with what? Four guys. Are they going to the space station? Where else are they going to go?
Yeah.
Right? Mars is it. There's nowhere else to go. Just go to the space station.
They're going to space dock because the Enterprise is ready.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
Take it out, Mr. Sulu. Let's go for a ride. All right. Well, we got a minute.
Impulse engines on a third.
This is a night launch which in Florida, which people love. There's something I've never seen one, but I hear that they're just stunning because of Fireball and all.
What you're about to see is a lower third that said Google just canceled this launch.
Canceled by Google. No more. Sorry. Elon Musk is such an interesting story because he's both crazy. He's got COVID now, apparently. He's both crazy and doing this.
A lot of masterminds and geniuses weren't very nice people, Leo. We tend to conflate the two. We think if you're a genius, you have to also be a humanitarian. And it's not, they're not co-linked at
all. If Thomas Edison had Twitter, we'd think he was a nut job, too. I'm sure.
Imagine Steve Jobs on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve Jobs on Twitter, right? But he had the good, oh, look at that. Now they got a big countdown. He had the good sense.
Bringing some production value.
To keep it.
He emailed a few times more than he probably should have.
Probably. Yeah. 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 The production values and all the SpaceX stuff. Through the roof. But NASA's even good at this. They understand public relations is a big part of this.
Yeah.
I feel like they could take... I didn't see... Obviously, we were on the show, so I didn't see it. The last launch, I thought they could have done a lot more production.
Oh, well, that's just you, Alex. Well, you should do a little telestrator. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
They turned out the lights. Look at that. See what I mean? They turned out the lights so you could see...
Not even gravity contains humanity,
ladies and gentlemen. Not even gravity. If you've got 800 million tons of explosive material up your butt, no.
We want to hear.
No, gravity won't contain you. Anyway, that's the motto of the M1 ship. Not even gravity contains Apple.
Dragon, the laws of, no, they mandate the laws of physics and thermal constraints still, thermal envelopes still constrain them.
It's actually really hard for me to watch launches because I'm still traumatized after Challenger. I just go, please, please don't let anything happen. I don't want anything to happen. That was what, 1985, 6?
I was watching it live. Yeah, I was too.
I was in school, watching it.
I was sitting in my Mac.
Wow, did you have to see that?
I was writing Mac assembly code, 68,000 assembly code, in my skivvies, watching it on TV.
Steve Gibson is doing that watching this launch.
Yes, that's right.
It just kind of hurt that Renee say he was watching it in school.
I know. What school? Grade school?
Yeah, I watched the first one in school, in elementary school, like the very first space mission. But
I'll never forget... my mom and dad waking me up in the morning to watch Apollo land on the moon in 1969. I was 12.
I was 3.
Oh, you're an old guy. I didn't realize you were that old. Yeah.
Black and white TV.
He's young at heart.
All right, there goes the Falcon rocket with the Crew Dragon. This time, a full complement.
See, GoPro.
GoPro? Is he gets a GoPro?
No.
Why not?
Probably a Tesla CyberPro.
It's an Osmo.
They actually, the video of the separation now and the orbital insertion is just remarkable to see that. They really do a good job with that. And
we're going to get main engine cut off. The 9 Merlin engines will throttle down and then shut down. We're going to get stage separation.
It's fun. I miss Walter Cronkite, but it's fun. So all good. They're up there.
We've begun the throttle down in preparation for stage separation.
That's pretty cool. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. It's been a tough year, as we all knew, and businesses have had to be very flexible, from working remotely to pivoting business models to survive and even grow. Restaurants moving their dining outdoors. They're adding takeout and catering. Consumer packaged good companies shifted to focus more on things like surface cleaners. This is my hand sanitizer, which is made down the road by the local distillery that used to make whiskey. Now they make whiskey scented hand sanitizer. It's a wonderful thing. Major retailers now sending face masks. But you know what? If you're a company and you're still hiring, you're still surviving in this climate, hey, good on you and thank you. Now, can I point you in the right direction? ZipRecruiter, it's the place to do hiring. Last thing you want to, I mean, there's a lot of people looking for work, but you want the right person, the exact right person. ZipRecruiter helps you do that. It's the one place you can always count on to make hiring faster and easier. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. You could try it free right now. ZipRecruiter posts your job posting on ZipRecruiter to 100-plus job sites. You cast the widest possible net, and then they make it easy to filter through the applications. They don't go to your phone or your email. They go to the ZipRecruiter interface where you can have screening questions. You can score people, narrow it down, pick the right person fast. And by the way, you will get a lot of qualified people because one of the things ZipRecruiter does, when they get your job posting, they look out through their existing current resumes and they find people that fit the job and they invite them to apply. our experience is you'll get qualified candidates within the first day. For us, it was within the first hour. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. It really works. You can see for yourself by trying it free. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Hey, good on you. If you're hiring, thank you. The world thanks you. We need more people like you. Now make it easy on yourself. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. Let ZipRecruiter take the tough job of hiring off your plate so you could focus on keeping your business alive and thriving in this interesting time. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. Let's keep going on the Google Sucks series. There's a new... They don't suck. I'm just teasing. There's a new
I've said before, like, I hold them to a high standard because I believe, like, they're one of the most important companies in history. Yes. They're trying to build Star Trek for us.
Yes.
And we want Star Trek built to not, like, to be good for us. So we have to be very scrutinous of Google.
Yes, I agree 100%. Agree 100%. Lawsuit, looking to get a class certified by the judge, filed in federal district court in San Jose on behalf of 4 plaintiffs contending, I don't know what even to think of this, that Google... Google is using Android users' limited cellular data allowances without permission to transmit information about those individuals that's unrelated to their use of Google services. 260 megabytes a month via cellular data when the phones are not even in use. I don't know yet what that data is or why it's being sent. Of course, you agree to it, I'm sure, somewhere in the fine print and all of that. 8.88 megabytes a day of data. Is that a problem? I mean, I guess it is if you have a very small cap.
Well, that's the thing is, like, they give you a lot of free stuff, but they don't pay you for the stuff. And that's a difference. I think eventually it'll become more and more like you're paying with your data. And for some people, you know, especially if it's costing you cellular or it's costing you some otherwise, you might decide that they should actually pay for that data rather than just charge you for it. It's probably telemetry or something. Google feeds its machine. Like, they are letting you use Google services inexpensively or freely because they are using all that data to make Google better.
Right.
And that's sort of the bargain that you're signing up for.
So what the attorneys did is they set up a brand new Samsung Galaxy S7 running Android, signed into a Google account, no Wi-Fi, let it just sit there with all apps closed, transferred data to Google about 16 times an hour. I guess the next thing to do would be put, you know, Wireshark or something on there and see what that data is. It's not the first time somebody's done this.
It just seems inefficient. Like the phone wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
And it was still uploading a whole bunch of data. So, at least. Yeah, I think that it's inefficient, but I don't know if it's worthy of a lawsuit.
Right. Maybe it's preloading ads. Maybe it's, I don't know what it's sending. The Register, which had this story, asked Google to respond. They declined to comment. It's just not known what it's doing. Well, I keep an eye on
it. Nerds will figure it out.
Nerds will figure it out. They figure everything out eventually. Eventually, they figure it all out. Eric Schmidt, remember him? Former CEO of Google, has decided to be a citizen, along with his family, of Cyprus.
I hear Cyprus is really nice this time.
It's really nice this time of year. The advantage is once you have a Cyprus passport, you can go to all the Schengen countries. You can go all over the EU. And it's not horribly, expensive, just a few million dollars. Cyprus is one of a number of countries doing this, allowing you to effectively buy citizenship, skirting residency requirements. Give us a little money. Eric did it not only for himself, but his family. So they're all, it doesn't mean, I don't know, do you have to give up your U.S. citizenship if you become a citizen of Cyprus?
I don't think he announced it.
But you still have to pay American taxes even if you don't live there.
So. Yeah, they're gonna get you.
Until he denounces it, he's still paying American taxes. This isn't really a tax thing. It's more of an access to country thing.
I think he just wants to be able to, travel around.
He needs to change his name to get his privacy back. That's what he told us to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in the last couple of years, it has, because of all the reciprocity with what the United States has been doing, things have gotten harder to travel. Not that we notice this year, but I think that being able to have more flexibility is probably part of the part of the process.
And you YouTubers might be disappointed to know you will not be on the bus this year in the YouTube Rewind because there ain't gonna be one.
I feel so weird about this. Like, I feel like this is YouTube sort of copping out on one sense, because 2020 has not been a, like, YouTube Rewind was originally a way to sort of celebrate YouTube, and it, eventually it became a way to sell YouTube to advertisers, and it became increasingly separate from what the platform actually was and sort of cringy for the people who were involved with it, culminating in, I think, one of the most disliked videos in the history of YouTube.
Was that last year or the year before? I think it was the year before.
Last year, yeah. They went back to the top 10 list. They did basically the Watch Mojo thing. But it feels like there's been a lot of people struggling really hard on YouTube, and they could tell that story, and they maybe because it's not an advertiser-friendly story, they're just abdicating it completely.
It's the first time since 2010 that YouTube will not have a year-end rewind.
And I wonder whether this is a convenient way for YouTube to kill it off. I think it was starting to become a bit of a liability.
Yeah, the 2018 was the most disliked video of all time on YouTube.
So I think we could see them just letting it slip off into the dark next year. Yeah. It'd be highly likely.
Yeah. It's a recipe for disaster. On the one hand, you are rewarding your top creators by giving them some prominence. But boy, if you mishandle it as they did in 2018, it's not
good. Well, most of those creators are doing okay.
They don't need the help.
And also, like, you can't win. Like, if why isn't PewDiePie here? Why isn't K-pop here? Right. Why aren't these tech creators there? I mean, like,
18 million thumbs down on the 2018 Rewind. However, it did get 208 million views. So that's not shabby.
YouTube made some ad money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. well, I just thought, I don't know anything about these things. I'm just curious. I watch these things. I don't know who any of the people are. The guy with
the blue
hair.
It's like Best of Twitch. It's like deciding not to do Best of Twitch just because 2020 was hard.
Right. No, we're doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
We're doing it, man. We're doing it. let's see. What else? EU hits Amazon with antitrust charges.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was going to be rough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. EU is really cranky about what
they don't like it if you're a store and a vendor.
What's going on? We're looking at space. Was that the main engine shutdown? John's my space expert. We're 9 minutes into the launch. Oh, that was, I love it when they do that. That was the recovery of the rocket landing on the platform. That's what that was. I love it.
Like watching a miracle every time.
Every time. Only one of them this time, John? Only one recovered. All right. There was only one. You only needed one, huh? All right. YouTube, European Union and YouTube, I confuse them all the time. The EU has unveiled formal antitrust charges against Amazon for abusing its dominance in online shopping. They've also opened a second investigation into the company's business practices. The investigation for the first part started last year to probe its dual role as a marketplace and retailer. The concern is that Amazon uses information it gains from being a marketplace for third parties to create its own competing products. The investigation found Amazon feeds non-public seller data, such as number of products ordered and selling revenue, into its own retail algorithms to help it decide which new products to launch and the price of each new author. Kind of like what grocery stores probably do when they
with house brands,
right?
It is, but at a whole different scale.
Yeah, well, So everything Amazon does is a
whole different scale. I don't know how you solve this problem. I mean, I do think that Amazon's in a very, it's obviously a very advantageous position for them to be in, but I think that it is starting to get to a point where people need to look at it at least. I don't usually say that, but it is starting to get to a point where as a retailer, as someone who's coming up with a new product, how do you come up with that new product without just being run over? You know, as soon as you start being successful, they're going to take it away, you know, and that's the, So I think that that's a really interesting problem that I don't have a solution for, but it's complicated because it doesn't necessarily hurt the consumer directly. Consumer will pay the same or less, you know, for something of equal, but does it stifle innovation because people can't, because I know for me, the moment someone says there's a product, I immediately want to go to, I immediately just see, is it on Amazon? Because I don't want to put in a new credit card. I don't want to go through the sign up process. You know, I want to just go to Amazon and have it shipped to me.
Free in 2 days.
Yep.
The part that gets crazy is when, because the common question, Alex, is it stifling, you know, technology or innovation, as you put it? Or, you know, there's many of products out there that are very good that don't exist on Amazon, but they still sell lots of, right? For instance, Rode doesn't sell on Amazon. You can buy Rode stuff there because people resell it.
Other people sell it. Yeah.
But, you know, you can't go to Amazon and buy a Pod Mic or a Rodecaster Pro or, you know, like direct from Rode. Rode is now one of the top microphone companies in the game. So, like, how do you say that, you know, well, Amazon did take a very similar S mic and made an Amazon basic version, but nobody on YouTube wants the Amazon basic one. Everybody wants the Rode Pod Mic. You can't get one. So I get it. And they're normally talking about like nuts and like, you know, hats and socks and things like that. But I don't know. Walmart's been doing it.
To your point, what's important for a lot of retailers or anyone making something is your brand. And it's how many people trust that brand. The reason that Rode can still sell these things outside of Amazon and Amazon can even copy it and doesn't matter is because Rode has built a level of trust with their users, with the public, in the same way that, you know, whether it's Blackmagic or Sony or other people, we have some level of trust that that's going to be a certain thing. Rode has benefited from that. But, you know, you look at, in a lot of ways, you know, if I'm buying if I come up with something that's remotely interesting, you know, whether it's Amazon or, you know, Chinese manufacturers, you end up with it's hard to get something out there that's simple, that might be ingenuity, you know, it might have some ingenuity, but might not be patented. It's hard to, you know, make that work. And I think Amazon is kind of this giant snake that's kind of just grabbing onto all those things. And again, as individual users, I don't think that we necessarily are impacted by it. But I do think that I know that when we've worked with, you know, large information companies, we've got a lot of innovations that we want to do that we're very careful not to show them, you know, because we're just like, well, that'll be it. Yeah. You know, like that'll, you know, they'll just take it away and they'll run off with it.
How it was with Microsoft. Remember back in the day, you would never show Microsoft anything.
Right. They just steal. So you're kind of dancing with, you know.
I wonder if at some point we're going to see kind of a head-to-head between Amazon and Alibaba, the Chinese giant. They had Singles Day was 11/11, was 4 days ago. $56 billion in sales in 1 day. In 1 day, they're spreading it out now. It's going to continue it started November 1st, and I guess it ended November 12th. Gross merchandise value surpassed $56.42 billion as of Wednesday. That's not a final figure. So I think you've got two mammoths. You've got one in the east, one in the west. It's going to be very interesting to see. At some point, they're going to come head to head, right? That's going to be the next world war. It's not going to be between nations. It's between online shopping giants. TikTok, we mentioned that TikTok was saying, hey, what up? What's going on? Are you going to still shut us down? They did get an extension. Cepheus responded saying you now have till November 27th. It's complicated, though, because a judge stayed it. So I don't know what's exactly going on. Cepheus, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., said you have till the 27th to divest. Is Oracle going to buy it? I don't even know.
Oracle and Walmart, right?
And Walmart. I don't even know. Yeah. TikTok was saying, hey, we haven't heard it from anybody. Commerce Department says it cannot, thanks to the court order, shut down TikTok. They were going to ban companies from providing internet hosting or services for the app. But the judge, Wendy Beadlestone, my favorite judge in Philadelphia, said the lawsuit was brought by three TikTok stars. comedian Douglas Marlin, fashion guru Cosette Renab, and musician Alex Chambers. They said, Your Honor, you shut down TikTok, you shut down all my income. And the judge said, yeah, that would be bad. So the judge stayed it. The TikTok has petitioned for the divestiture order to be invalidated. There was an election.
Governments shouldn't try to regulate specific individual companies, but make regulations that cover industry. So TikTok should be regulated as part of Facebook and Twitter and TikTok, and Huawei should be regulated as part of Infinite. Like, targeting companies leads down to very dumb paths.
And it was just a kind of aimless political ploy, for votes.
They lost interest after the election.
The election's over, and there's no interest. It's like the phone went dead because no one cares anymore. Yeah. And it was, it does kind of lean towards the capriciousness of the current, political atmosphere that we're going to go down some crazy path for no real reason. So I think that it'll probably just wind away into the,
I think so too.
I think there's still something too, where a lot of it also came up from, again, the regular traditional media. They talk the story a lot because at the end of the day, they're losing eyeball time to the burgeoning medias, if you would call them. And if you remember, say, circa 2003, when Viacom just wanted to, I'm sorry, I take that back, 2007, when Viacom wanted to blow up YouTube, and there was all these fights and stuff, and then they went into a room and they shook hands and they shook it out, and all of a sudden lots of Viacom shows had YouTube channels that got millions and millions of views, and they still exist to this day. So like, initially you were the threat, and then they figured out how they could use you, so they put the lawsuit away, worked it into, let's make it work to our benefit as well, and then now it's normal, right? Stephen Colbert is on YouTube 2 seconds after he goes off the air, because it's a very lucrative position.
Yeah. Karsten's first internet video. I don't remember this. We talked last week about how they've remastered the Dancing Baby. You remember that one? Do you remember the exploding? They remastered it. You didn't see it? Yeah, they've made it. It's because it was, I guess it was, you probably know, Alex, it was like a sample 3D model from one of those programs.
And they put it in Ally McBeal, didn't they, at some point?
And then it was big in Ally McBeal. The Oregon Historical Society took the original exploding whale footage from 1970, 50 years ago. It was 16 millimeter. And they remastered it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, oh, it's going to load an ad. I don't want to see an ad. Here we go. The special remastered version of the first video. Oh, it's still loading an ad. Karsten, no, here we go. Here we go.
The Oregon State Highway Division.
Look at it. See how much better that looks now than it used to? Let's play it.
Not only had a whale of a problem on its hands, it had a stinking whale of a problem. What to do with one 45-foot, 8-ton whale dead on arrival?
Oh, my God.
Well, we're moved back a quarter of a mile away. The sand dunes there were covered with spectators and landlubber newsmen, shortly to become land blubber newsmen, with a blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds.
This is the first viral video, apparently. This is more exciting than the launch of the Falcon. Very excited. All right, Alex. Oh, God. Oh, no. Here comes the flubber.
Oh, that didn't go well.
Okay. It's flubber all over the highway.
Our cameras stopped rolling immediately after the blast. The humor of the entire situation suddenly gave way to a run for survival as huge chunks of whale blubber fell everywhere.
Okay. Thank you, Karsten.
Was it at least barbecued at that point? Did you start eating?
Digitally remastered. I don't understand. I just
You know how many neural engines it took to render that out, Leah? All of them.
You could have done it on an M1 chip very, very quickly.
Same for the M1.
See, I got it in. We went full circle. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we have done our duty to you all and then some. So I'm going to take this opportunity to say thank you to our fabulous panel. Renee, we'll see you back here on Tuesday for another Mac Break Weekly.
Yes, sir.
I think we can go in an even deeper dive on the M1 chip and find out what you found out. Maybe we'll even get to see your review. I don't know if it'll be out by Tuesday, but we'll find out. I'm not saying that he is reviewing it or that he has his hands on anything or he would even know anything about it. But if he did, maybe we'd find out more on Tuesday. Also want to thank Alex. Alex, you got to come back to Mac Break Weekly whenever you can, okay?
I'm ready.
Okay.
So
now that election's over, you got some time on your hands.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of production over the next couple of weeks, and then after that, I'm ready to go.
All right. Nice. Alex, you can find him, of course, at Alex Lindsay on Twitter, LINDSAY, youtube.com/AlexLindsay if you want to find out more about office hours. Every morning, 7 days a week for 3 hours, they discuss video production technology. They have guests. It's really an amazing show. You do a great job. And it's so nice to see you again, Alex. Thank you for joining us.
Good to be here.
Doc Rock! He's a YouTube celeb. YouTube.com/DocRock. Also doing double duty this week. Thank you for being on Mac Break Weekly back here. On
Week 46, 2020. We set a record. I got tweeted twice.
Tweeted twice? tweeted twice. Tweet about it that you got tweeted twice. Okay.
Yes, sir.
We do a tweet every Sunday around about 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can watch us do it live at twit.tv/live, but you don't have to because we have on-demand versions of the show available at our website, twit.tv. There's a YouTube channel, I hear. I don't know. The kids tell me that you should subscribe and smash the bell, and that way something wonderful will happen. There it is. Right. Where is it? Right there. You can also use your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That'd be another way to get it automatically the minute it's available. This Week in Tech. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Amazing.